Just Goal With It is a podcast hosted by two millennials who swear. And also, it's about horror films, so listener discretion is advised. We will put specific content warnings in the show notes.
Boo!
Yeah. Good.
Okay. I was like, yeah, I think
I already did it.
Are you more threatening with me holding it?
It is.
Do you like this?
It's good. It's good for me.
Oh, no. So here's the thing, everybody. We're at our haunted hotel, okay? The only way to get the mic to work was Kate's fit onto the dresser. Mine, not so much. So I'm holding it, and I can't open our little... We have champagne.
I'll open mine and hand it to you, and then I'll open that one and keep it. Oh my god. It's pressurized. You know that.
I don't want to do this. I'm sorry, my mouth was on it. Love you.
That was a nice crack.
Good crack.
Okay, so these actually aren't pressurized, so you would have been fine.
Oh, good. Yeah. Wait, I can do this. Yeah. I'm not worried. Everyone chill. All right, here we go.
Is it the mouth juice?
No.
Kate.
I can't. Guys, hold on.
He did it so well.
That was so nice.
What if mine was pressurized and I bit it and just like...
Oh my god, I forgot.
Did you see that?
That was very, that was slick.
I blew the cap off.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Clink.
I tapped my laptop.
Have to get dangerously close to spilling it on tech at some point.
Last time we recorded at a hotel, if you'll recall, I dumped your entire bottle of champagne onto the...
It was like your mug.
I thought it was the bottle. Thank God it was the mug.
No, we still had enough to drink.
You're so right. So now I've got this and this. So
yeah,
I hope I do need to get... That's fine, guys. So we're talking about... Are you ready?
Yeah.
This is a mess. I hope you're excited. We're talking about Suspiria, the 2018 remake.
What?
Absolutely wild film.
Uh-huh.
Take a little sippy.
A sippy.
Mm-hmm. Ah. Okay, now.
Refreshment.
I'm going to just... Think I'll be safe there? Yeah. It's right near the text, so that's probably good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Would you like some fun facts?
I would love some fun facts.
Also, if you guys hear a bunch of... wiggling. We're sitting on leather chairs in our our hotel.
Our very historical hotel.
We'll post pictures of it.
Oh, it's been incredible.
It's been really cool. It's very old.
Yeah.
What was our hotel like at the other place? Was it? It wasn't this old
looking. It was also old, but it wasn't like the oldest in the county. And this one is definitely the oldest in this county. I don't know if it's the oldest in the state.
It's the oldest in the state.
Okay, yeah.
Oldest restaurant, oldest hotel.
Yeah. It used to be a Stagecoach Inn.
Yeah. And... Not only that, but it looks older.
Yeah.
The other one looked like a hotel.
Yeah.
This one looks like an old house.
Yeah.
It's wild, guys. There's floral wallpaper everywhere. And when you walk in, they use gas lamps still.
Oh, yeah.
You can smell it.
Oh.
When I walk in, every single time we walk out and then we come back to the hotel, you can smell the gas.
Wow. I can't smell shit.
Really?
So.
Well, yeah. You... Poor Kate is like a cold.
Yeah.
But yeah, so they still have gas lamps. We're not allowed to use our phones in the lobby because it ruins the historic look.
And our room is kind of like a labyrinth of doors that we had to check out the first time.
Because there's two doors, but we didn't know. So Kate, we walked in the front door, right? And it's like a little living room. And then we walked into the second part, which is like the bedroom. And the door was just wide open to the hallway. And we were both like, oh. Kate just goes, it's open. And if it's not being used, there's these little chains on the door, almost like a museum.
Yeah.
So you can see the rooms. And so that was what it looked like. And I was like, we are in a museum right now.
Yeah.
It looked like we were doing a living historical.
Yeah. Thing. It's like all churn butter while you watch.
Let me put on my bonnet. It was great. So we've had a great time. But it's business time now.
It's business time.
We're talking about Suspiria 2018.
Suspiria.
I went to the wrong portion of notes.
Well,
I hope you're ready. There's a lot of names in this too that are going to be rough, bear with us. We looked up how to say them, but
I wrote down one of them because it was relevant to my notes.
Good.
But I'm not helping you at all, apparently, for the director. I have the writer.
I think I got it.
Okay.
So it was directed by Luca Guadagnino.
Okay.
Guadagnino,
sure.
I think is what it was.
Yeah.
Also did I Am Love, A Bigger Splash, and Call Me By Your Name.
Yeah.
We Are Who We Are, HBO miniseries as well, which won like a bunch of awards.
Yeah.
So people really like that. And then the screenplay. This is the one you have written down, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So this was David
Kajanik.
Kajanik.
If you're going with the Americanized version.
Right. Which apparently is like what his family kind of settled on when they like moved here. Because it's... Do you remember what it was?
At first I was going to say Polish, but then Serbian?
Serbian. It's Serbian. So that's David Kajanik?
Kajanik.
Kajanik.
Yeah.
Did Bones and All, The Terror, A Bigger Splash, and he's actually a native of Ohio.
Oh!
So...
Okay. This is the moment where I have to say something that my partner said and give him credit now.
Oh my gosh,
because I'll
forget
to give him credit later, and I might say it like it's my thought and it's not my thought. So I have to prevent myself from doing that. One of the primary characters is also from Ohio.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he said, Susie's from Ohio, a classic protagonist state.
Oh, right. She did say that. They're like, where are you from? She's like, Ohio. She said it so sad, too. And I was like, girl, we've all been there.
I get it. I get it.
I absolutely get it. Okay. So that was a screenplay. The cinematography was Sayambu Mukdipram.
Okay.
A Thai cinematographer. Also did. This was a movie that I think was at either Sundance or De Palme. That's one of them.
Or De Palme.
Yeah. One of the big film festivals. It was there. It was called Uncle Bunmi Who Can Recall His Past Lives.
Ooh.
Yeah. And Call Me By Your Name. And Antonia.
Okay.
Antonia was really good. Won a bunch of awards. Uncle Bunmi, that one won, like, I think some awards at the film festival. It was kind of an art house thing.
Yeah.
And then obviously Call Me By Your Name.
Is that the one with the age gap?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
The one that I have not seen and will not see?
The one where he fucks a peach. Yes.
Cool. Didn't know that.
Sorry. Yeah.
Okay.
I've not seen it. I just know he fucks a peach. So, and then the music, guys, is a wild ride. It's by Thom Yorke.
Yeah.
The main vocalist and songwriter for Radiohead.
I thought we said it was Thom Yorke.
Sorry, guys. It's Thom Yorke. Thom Yorke is what I said.
Thom.
Thom. Like you get Thom. Scared in the middle. Thom. Sorry.
Or like scared he's about me. To sneeze and then he doesn't.
Thom.
Thought I had it, Yorke.
Thom Yorke's going to come for us.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know if I really have to give more. He's from Radiohead. Congrats. Yeah. He does a lot.
Yeah.
There were so many things that I was like, if I write this down, we're going to be here forever.
That's it. And I already have a hefty nerd corner.
Yeah, I was like, Kate's got a big nerd corner, so I'm going to keep it light. I love holding this. I feel powerful.
You had the same vibe last time, and I think that I would feel like burdened, but you feel like you've been
set free. I feel free because then I can just...
Oh, yeah.
And it sounds funny, you know? So... I was far away from
big old air horns. If we ever come to that moment, where
I did
we need
hit my head on the chair, though. So not that free. All right. Would you like to know the budget?
Ooh, yeah.
Okay. So the budget was $20 million.
Oh,
hefty.
Huh.
How much do you think it made?
I have no idea. I always like try to scroll past whenever I see numbers, and I saw some numbers out of context, and they were like a range, and so one of them might have been like opening box office or something.
Right.
I had the hiccup in like one area.
Had to.
So I have no fucking clue. So you said like $20 million?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say $100 million?
You're being so nice.
$30 million.
You're being really nice.
$5 million.
You're on track.
Oh my god.
$7.9 million.
No.
Yeah, so this was considered a box office flop.
Oh, okay. So I knew critically it was a flop, but I did not know it like
box office as well, surprisingly.
Okay.
Apparently. And I, again, I don't know if that's opening weekend or worldwide, but usually it's worldwide. Like, when I look it up further, it usually specifies worldwide.
Yeah.
The
number I had seen was, like, 1.8 or something. So I think that that would have been, like, box
that's
office
probably
weekend.
Probably weekend. Yeah. I think this was worldwide.
Oh, boy.
I don't think people were fans.
No.
So.
Dakota Johnson always gets the fuzzy end of the lollipop.
Yeah, 100%.
It's really not fair.
That's not the truth, Ellen. So, yeah, it was not great. I have like very few little fun facts that I can talk about. And if it happens to
step on your toes?
I highly doubt it will.
Then you just let me know.
I didn't talk at all about, like, behind the scenes stuff.
I don't have much. It was really just, like, stuff that was like, hey, the guy who made the screenplay wasn't a fan of the original. Okay, interesting.
Yeah. He's seen it twice. He saw it once, like, early on in his, like, in his childhood. What? And then he watched it again when he was pulled onto the project. But I have this quote somewhere. But he was like, yeah, it's, like, not really my jam. But, like, what he wanted to do was take it out of this, like, hermetically sealed dance academy, like, really broaden it. And the vision of the director was much more about, like, the area and the political context. And so he was like, oh, that much bigger, I can get behind.
Okay.
And so it was more about, like, how he felt watching the original.
That's what it kind of says here. It says it's supposed to be more of an homage to the powerful emotion that he felt when he watched it instead of, like, to the film itself.
Yeah. But he's seen it twice. Yep. He, like, says that he wanted to, like, put it aside so that it wouldn't, like, become everything he'd, like, thought about and, like, drive everything, but he wanted it to be fresh so that he remembered the things about it.
I mean, okay.
We've already said, maybe off mic, that I have qualms with this man, so.
Kate's definitely got qualms. I'm looking up some stuff here, and, like, I just don't have a lot of, like.
There's not much on him.
No. I wanted to do, like, about filming, but if you haven't seen this one already, it's just a lot different than the other. Very. And the fact that it doesn't have some of the fun effects.
Yeah.
But you know what this one does have. it is also filmed on 35mm.
Oh.
So some of the filming took place Palazzo, Essence, December, blah, blah, blah. Trying to see what specifically it was put on, so I'm not, like, lying to you. Like its predecessor, Suspiria was shot on 35mm film stock.
But I bet not the three dye color.
The cinematographer previously worked on Call Me By Your Name, shot the film exclusively on Kodak Vision 3 500T5219 without correction filters. So it would achieve, like, that 1970s style effect.
Yeah.
And it also uses slow motion and, like, lots and lots of camera zooms that was used in, like, the 70s a lot.
Yeah.
So it was really just trying to capture the 70s film style, which is pretty cool. But in contrast to the original, this film uses primary colors sparingly.
Yeah.
Which,
you can tell. It's so drab.
He said he described the film as, like, winterish evil and really dark, which is complete opposite to the first one. And you can tell when you watch this.
As soon as it started, I was like, the color palette is the other end of the spectrum,
like,
here.
He's, so here's a quote about, like, the color palette. Mm-hmm. I think it's from the director, potentially, but we'll see. So, in opting for a more muted color palette, the filmmakers used cinematographer Michael Ballhaus's work in the films of Rainier Fassbinder as reference points, as well as the work of modernist artist Bauhaus, which Guadagnino felt created uncanny eeriness and fear. The compositions, costumes, and set design were all crafted with this in mind and prominently feature browns, blacks, blues, and greens.
Yeah.
Which you can tell when you're watching it, especially because we just watched the other.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. Duh. Yeah. and also most of the special effects, including, like, makeup, were practical effects.
Yeah. Did I send you the text about Tilda Swinton?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay. I just spit all over everything.
I burped. It's okay.
Tilda Swinton plays three different characters.
Yes.
Okay, you knew that. Yeah. You knew that she was the old man.
Old man and the old mother.
Marcos, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, I told my partner that, and his text was, you're fucking lying. What? It's like, well, I would never lie about Tilda Swinton.
Did you read about it at all?
Yeah,
I read a lot. It's really funny that they were just like, oh, no, it's not. That's not Tilda Swinton. It was supposed to be this, like, thing that they wanted to keep secret until, I think, critics had probably seen it. But every time people would be like, oh, so that's Tilda Swinton, they'd be like, shut your mouth, it's actually this man. And they had a fake name and everything.
They had an IMDb profile for him,
and they were like, it's his first film. And I was like, oh, okay, because it's Tilda Swinton. As soon as, like, he popped up, I went, that's Tilda Swinton. I had seen this before and went, Tilda Swinton.
Okay. Sorry, I caught you.
Oh, no, you're good.
I had only seen it, I saw it twice now because I rewatched a significant portion of it yesterday.
Oh, like, right.
I, like, remembered things, because the first time I watched it, I drank a significant quantity of wine. And so I was like, I need to make sure I'm being fair. So I rewatched the entire, like, back 75%. So it was like a 2-hour commitment yesterday. But where was I going? Oh, the first time I watched it, I was like, sure, that's, like, an old man. And then the second time I watched it, I was like, that's Tilda Swinton. Like, that's obviously, like, the voice was high enough.
Yes.
And her eyes.
Her eyes.
Yeah.
The shape of her face. I just also, like, I like Tilda Swinton, and I've seen so many movies with Tilda Swinton. So the first time I saw this, I was watching it. I think I saw it with somebody.
Yeah.
And I remember looking over and, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my computer went to sleep and I was like, you don't do that.
Okay, good. I was about to be like, are we okay?
Yeah, we're good.
Is the surge protector on? Is that why?
Yeah, it's on. It's
okay, good.
Woo! That's why I was like, I usually have it on like for forever. Okay. So I was surprised.
I was just making sure. I'm leaving it in.
I had like a panic face, so that's fair.
Oh, but I saw it with my friend and I leaned over immediately just to be that annoying guy. And I went, that's Tilda Swinton.
Perfect.
And they were like, okay. And I was like, so cool. And then I got to the part with Marcos and I went, that's Tilda Swinton too. I was being a real dick.
No, I think that's, you and I watch films well together.
I see Tilda Swinton's face and I'm like, I got to tell people. But yeah, I thought it was really funny that they were like, no.
Do you want to hear an awful confession?
Yeah.
So I know they're different people. They're very, very different people. But I had a moment as soon as I was like, oh, Tilda Swinton, I love her in Game of Thrones. I got her mixed up with Gwendolyn and Christie. So different. So different.
Okay. But they both have that like white blonde hair.
Yes.
A very striking face.
Yeah, very striking, so, like very regal, just inherently.
Yes, I absolutely get it.
Thank you.
That one I get. Like they're very different people, but they have so similar vibes.
Okay. It was the vibes, not like facial structure. And it was just vibes.
Yeah. Vibes
alone.
Anyway,
back to you.
I'm not mad. This time. That's all my facts.
Okay.
I know I have to summarize it. And last time I summarized it by just saying, like, a girl goes to a dance school run by witches.
Yeah.
Now this one is more like a girl goes to a dance school and is the witch.
Yeah. Spoiler alert, but I don't think anyone who's listening to this cares about that spoiler.
Yeah, sorry, guys. But it was also just so funny watching this, having just seen the other one and being like, real different Susie vibes.
Uh-huh.
Real different. And Blanc, too. Obviously.
And Olga.
Olga. Yes.
Yeah, Blanc and Olga and Susie are like the ones that changed. Sarah stayed like fairly.
Sarah's pretty similar.
Yeah.
And actually, I really liked
Sarah. In terms of like motives, she was more fleshed out in this one.
Yes.
Especially since she wasn't written as a 10-year-old.
I actually have a lot of notes on the character. I think this one is so much more character and plot driven.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of the point because you said it was emotions. It was more about the emotions instead of like what happened. Taking a little sippy.
A sippy sip.
Mm-hmm. I started taking a sip and immediately went, you should keep talking. And I almost went, and I was like, why wouldn't you just wait?
Yeah.
So sit there. So yeah, a girl goes to dance school and she is the witch.
And she is the witch.
She's the Ohioan witch.
Yeah. Yeah. We only get one a century. And
it's such a bummer that it's not me.
Yeah.
But it's okay.
I didn't, you know, I knew that it wasn't really probable that it'd be me, but I still held out hope for a while.
Yeah. I know.
I was rooting for you.
Thank you. I was rooting for you.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah.
See, it's funny. I wrote your name on the ballot.
I wrote your name. Oh! The people are always like, what the fuck? Or it's the ghosts.
It's the ghosts. Yeah.
It's the ghosts.
Oh, man.
Okay, so wait. How did they sum it up?
IMDb.
Yeah.
I also looked at Rotten Tomatoes, but I was just like, that's too much.
No.
So IMDb, mm-hmm. A darkness swirls the center of a world-renowned dance company, one that will engulf the artistic director, an ambitious young dancer, and a grieving psychotherapist. Some will succumb to the nightmare, others will finally wake up.
Oh!
That's so fucking artful.
That's actually really good.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, thoughts good on the movie aside, I thought IMDb. It was great. Good job.
Yeah.
It was good stuff.
Yeah.
I have no idea what you were going to talk about. My first guess was like the differences between the two.
Okay.
But then I was like, that could be a little, I don't want to be too on the nose.
I'll give you a hint. You said some of the words that I'll go into depth on.
I did?
Uh-huh.
Was it like the difference between the color palette or the emotions? Or
no, I wanted to do color, but then I was like, we've done color.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to kind of take this in a different niche direction.
My thought was maybe like the difference in like the plot, the fact that like one is driven by like aesthetics and one is driven completely by actual plot and...
So, funny fact, that's the second half of Nerd Corner that is optional.
Oh my god, wait, what are you doing?
I'm doing homages versus remakes.
Homages versus remakes.
Yeah.
I did say that.
Yeah, you said, like, both of those. Anyway.
That's amazing. Okay, I'm excited.
So, if the weakness of the original was the fairly basic plot, the weakness of the remake was potentially the attempt to layer too many parallel stories without giving them enough depth. I talked about this movie for a while with my partner.
Yeah.
And my ultimate thoughts are, one, homage versus remake might be an important distinction to make.
Yeah.
It might not be. And two, while the setting was very intentionally opened up to the broader city and political context, it failed to provide enough detailed information to actually effectively layer the themes in the way they intended to.
That's 100%. Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I was so afraid. I was like, what if Nikki really liked it?
And no, like, I mean, I think it's an interesting movie. And like, don't get me wrong, I would watch this one again, and just because it's wild. Yeah. But they just had so many things happening. But it was like they were giving me a crumb of each thing. And I was like, you can't just give me a crumb and then another crumb and then another. I was like, I'd love it if that built into a loaf of bread.
We are like, aligned.
Okay, good.
And so I basically like, I might save it for the middle when we're talking about horror, but I might do it just as partner. I'll just feel it out and say like what you want at that time.
You go wild.
Because it's long. But accordingly.
This is heavy, so I'm just kidding.
I'll be talking about homages and remakes and where this falls, kind of. And I don't have my mind made up on all of it, and I want a lot of feedback. And then we'll take a look at the historical context that was supposed to underlay the plot of the Academy, if we have time.
Okay.
I may honestly save it to the middle when we're talking about horror, because it feels more into review than cultural analysis. But that's we'll figure fair. It out when we get there. So we've talked about homages before, but a quick definition, because I always need a reminder.
Right.
Direct quote from Studio Binder. Homage is a dedication and or show of respect for someone or something, often as a reference in a work of art. The work of art can vary, literature, poetry, theater, cinema, as can the type of homage. Coming from the French word representing a declaration of fealty to a feudal lord, the word now tends to just mean whenever an artist refers to another artist in their work. An homage can be as obvious or as subtle as the artist chooses, resulting in examples that are easy to catch or hard to notice.
Huh. Okay.
And just as a side note, something that was super validating was the pronunciation guide for that, because I'd previously had like a wee little crisis. The French pronunciation is homage.
Yeah.
The American pronunciation is homage. And I had said homage because there's a store in our town.
Yeah, it's called, yeah.
Yeah. And I was like, are they going to like think I'm pretentious if I say homage? Are they homage?
That's so funny because like I knew that that store was called like homage.
Yeah.
But I still just always say homage when I'm thinking of like this. So the store was like separate in my mind.
Yeah. And so like when I remember we'd been talking about it once and I was like, oh, it pays like homage. And then I was like, ooh, what if I shouldn't cross those streams?
Don't.
And I like panicked thinking I had no place in the world and I was a fool. It was very validating to see like, okay, no, that is actually a
it's like a valid distinction.
Pronunciation. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah. So this kind of comes down to like when people are pronouncing like a euro or a hero or whatever, it's like someone will correct you no matter what you say.
Yeah, I was like,
so say whatever you are comfortable saying and roll with it.
You're never right.
No.
You're also never wrong.
No.
Well, sometimes people are wrong.
Yeah.
That's okay.
No. And like, if it's something that like you're a white person, this is very clearly like you're wrong. Like that's important to like be right about. But there's so many things where it's like either versus either. Someone will correct you. They're an asshole for correcting you.
Yeah.
Just say whatever you want.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's fine.
It's fine.
I'm not flashing back to second grade when I said either, trying to be fancy. And she was like, it's pronounced either. And I was like, no, Mrs. Allen, it can be either way. Anyway, I was a brat. And I didn't speak up for myself in that moment, but I still hold bitterness in my heart.
Oh, I love that for you.
Keep
it.
I thought you were going to say, you bitch.
No. I love it. Having this hand free to be like, if I had nails on this hand, I swear I would be like, you know what? I have stick-on nails in my podcast bag that spilled. I could just pop those baby on tonight and really gesture.
Incredible.
We could do our nails. I have enough for both of our hands.
Oh my God. This would be very exciting.
They're purple. They're pretty.
I love it.
Yeah.
And it would match both of our sweaters.
Yeah, because it's like a lilac-y purple.
Ooh, and I have like periwinkle and you have like a light pink.
I know.
We bought matching sweaters.
we're hopping around town. Turns out we showed up. Your partner
called it out.
Called it out. Said that we were absolutely going to get like cursed.
Yeah. Let me find the text because I want to give credit where credit's due. This should be super fun. Perfect timing. Showing up when you did because we didn't know that there's a
girls' night thing. There's like a thing going on. Yeah.
And then he said, although arriving from out of town the day of a special targeted event sounds like the premise of a horror movie.
Yeah. So like we're either going to get kidnapped or we're going to have a lovely shopping night, and I can't wait.
Can't wait to find out which.
We'll see.
We'll see.
And we'll be easy to spot because we have fucking matching sweaters.
Yep.
Jesus Christ.
Incredible.
It's going to be so good.
Anyway, back to substance.
Back to substance.
Relatively. So homage can walk a fine line between inspiration and theft. Mm-hmm. But the important part to know is that it's influenced by another work of art. It can be a camera angle or movement or the outfit someone wears in a fight scene. So like Kill Bill. People say about like Tarantino where it's like he has a very... like heavy use of homage that can really veer into dangerous territory.
Careful.
Yeah. And there are a few moments in this film where the camera zoomed wildly and I was like, oh, just like home. My home is now the original Suspiria. Yes. I'm setting up mail forwarding. Don't worry about it. So what's a remake then?
Yes.
So we talked about homage. What's a remake? So it feels like one of those things that's so obvious, but then you try to explain it and you're like, it's a make, but re.
Make it, but again.
Yeah. Where it's like you try to define something and you find that you cannot define it without using the word itself.
Yeah, and you're like, fuck.
Like a decision is like, you decide to do something.
You know.
That one's like a choice.
You have to make a decision.
Yeah. You have to decide a path.
What?
Anyway, maybe I'm like the person that just...
Sorry?
It might be like a me thing where I just struggle to define a word without using the word. Maybe this is not universal. No,
it's not.
Okay. So, direct quote. I think I didn't... I put it in quotes, but I didn't cite it. I'll find it and I'll put it in my excited show notes. But like all of my sources are like cited in my bibliography, but I don't have who said this. So it was either Studio Binder or it was Film School Rejects or it was an article in Vox, all of which are linked. So sorry.
Good.
A remake tells the same story as the original but uses a different set of cast and may use actors from the original, alter the theme, or change the flow and setting of the story. In addition, since a remake is released sometime after the original work, it may incorporate new technologies, enhancements, and techniques.
Okay.
So if we want to get more in the weeds, we can also compare it against reboots and reimaginings.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know that these were on the table, but now that I do, I'm inviting you to the party. So according to, I think it was Kolsky at Vox, either Kosky or Kolsky. Why am I so bad at citing today? I'm pulling up my notes because I'm because like,
it's girls
I need
night.
To find.
We're already in the fog night. Of girls' night.
Yeah. And I think that this Kosky, not Kolsky. Okay. Genevieve Kosky. Mm-hmm. It's girls' night. I can't do
Guys,
a dirty
it's
like
girls
that.
Girls' night. We yeah. can't.
No. Okay. So according to Kosky at Vox, the quick and dirty of these Hollywood terms is, quote, a reboot resets the continuity of an established film series. Mm-hmm. A remake closely recreates one particular film.
Okay.
A reimagining is a remake with at least one big change.
Okay.
Quote, in order to be considered a remake, a new film has to hew closely to the original in terms of plot, character, and format, with some allowances made to appeal to modern sensibilities, or in the case of English language remakes like The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo or Let the Right One In, American sensibilities.
Right.
Something to call it with reboots. So that was a remake. Something to call it with reboots. Direct quote. There's a lot of conceptual crossover between the remake and the reboot, which both center on the idea of taking an old property and reconfiguring it.
Okay.
But the two are, at root, quite different. The term reboot should be reserved for film properties that have extended beyond a single movie and have thus established a continuity for the subsequent reboot that throws it out of order.
Right.
Establish a continuity that the subsequent reboot throws out in favor of the new status quo.
Yeah.
But in the interest of being thorough, it's not so cut and dry when you read across other sources.
No.
So I think it was Neil Whitman writing elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was like an article on vocabulary.com.
Yeah.
And they said the following. So as far as movies go, then, Orky's Guide is this. If it's not a sequel or a prequel and is not the same story as the original, it's a reboot. Mark Webb's The Amazing Spider-Man fits these criteria. It retells the origin story of Spider-Man, but in a way that's inconsistent with the story told in Sam Raimi's 2002 Spider-Man.
Mm.
So this author specifically brings in the origin of the term reboot, which has its roots in computer jargon, which comes from much more archaic phrases. So it's talking about like a boot process and a reboot coming from bootstrapping, which is older, obviously. And it was interesting, but not relevant enough for me to go deep into that.
Right.
But if we're looking at just the first source, reboots are usually reserved for films within a larger franchise.
Okay.
This is a single film, so we can probably set aside reboot for now.
Right.
So what if we're deciding between a remake and a reimagining? The two authors disagree on this one a bit, too.
Oh, gosh.
So let's see. This one is Kosky. So a reimagining is basically a remake, but with a fancy new hat. Something's been added to or changed from the original film that alters it in a major way. In Disney's case, at least lately, that means appending the term live action to any successful animated film.
That's so true.
Or shifting the focus to a different character in the story, as with Maleficent.
Oh, yeah. Same with, like, Cruella.
Yeah. Reimaginings are a close cousin of the adaptation, which lifts content from one medium and applies it to another.
Mm-hmm.
The film reimagining is just adapting within the same medium. Sometimes, in fact, a film reimagining can happen with a slight detour into a different medium. So, like, Little Shop of Horrors.
Right.
It's, like, film, Broadway, film again.
Yeah.
And, yeah, whatever. And then, so for Kosky, if there's a major change, it can be a reimagining. Like, the gender-swapped Ghostbusters.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So if it sticks pretty close to the original source material, it's a remake. One of Whitman's sources, however, states that the original medium actually makes a fair amount of difference. Mm-hmm. If the original material was a movie, it's a remake. If the original material was written, it's a reimagining.
Now what?
Yeah.
What would you consider when they do the Muppet version of a movie?
I would say reimagining.
Yeah, I was like, yeah. Gotta be, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, when they did, like, the Haunted Mansion one, it sticks so close to, like, the ride in the original whatever.
Yeah.
But they're Muppets.
There are Muppets. I would say...
So I'm like, I guess reimagining?
I would say that that is a significant change, adding Muppets.
But the Muppets are the characters doing the exact same lines and, like, stuff happening. Okay. So I'm like... The only difference is Muppets.
Listen,
it's so good.
I'll accept that Muppets might not fit in our realm of understanding.
That might just be a Muppetization.
Yeah.
If they should don't just have make a Muppet Pride and Prejudice, where the only person is Mr. Darcy.
Oh my god. But what if they did a Pride and Prejudice where Mr. Darcy was a Muppet and everyone else was a human?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, I thought you meant...
only Mr. Darcy.
I thought you meant Mr. Darcy was surrounded by Muppets and hated everything.
Oh, yeah, no, that is what I'm saying.
No, I want Mr. Darcy to be a Muppet and everyone else is a human.
It's even better.
It's so dumb.
I just want to see that. I want to see one human just having a beautiful love story with a Muppet.
And he's like a moody Muppet.
He's so moody and everyone else is like... Yeah, look at that beautiful, moody man.
Yeah.
Eligible match. He's not eligible. He's curmudgeon.
Okay. Okay.
Excuse me. Gotta get it out.
Yeah. So ultimately, the distinction between remake, reboot, reimagining, etc. may not be super important.
Uh-huh.
But I like collecting little facts, even if they don't end up being more than semantics. And the offer.
Yeah.
The off...
I draw my phone. Ghost.
You saved me from saying off for a third time.
I did that for you.
Thank you. The author of the piece in Vox points out that ultimately we tend to have negative associations with remakes, reboots, and the like because a lot of them feel like money grabs that aren't done well. But we should be careful to judge the new film on the merits and not dismiss it outright. How does my engagement differ if I view it not as homage but a remake? So, like, that's where I'm coming into this. Where
that
it's
makes
like
sense.
They say, like, very... like a lot of different people connected to the film, like Tilda Swinton says that too.
Okay.
Like it's, you have to know it's not a remake. We're not trying to overwrite the previous film or whatever. We're just trying to pay homage. So like if I view this as homage, but not a remake, how does my engagement differ? I think I'm more likely to receive it kindly.
Same.
Because they're saying this film did something dope and we're going to praise it for those things, then take it our own way.
Right.
But I'm also highly skeptical of calling something homage instead of remake or reimagining. So it's where I personally struggle to evaluate the film because it shares the same name, primary characters, and core conflict of the original. And I love the original. So how do I separate that out? How does that impact how I engage with this piece of media? And how about other folks who haven't seen the original?
Right.
My partner hadn't seen the original. And so, like, as I was watching, I had to, of course, be like, oh, this is not, like, this is where it differs. Or, oh, no, that's the same. Or, like, oh.
And this,
like,
is hard because it differs constantly.
Yeah. And like, so I kept calling her Pat. And he's like, you mean Patricia? I was like, I mean Pat. Yeah. And what impact does the knowledge that this came from another film have on how we're ready to engage with it?
Yeah.
So, like, I'm absolutely aware that I'm judging it against the 77 film when maybe it would actually be kinder to evaluate it entirely separately.
Like, on its own.
But here we are. I can't.
How can you? Okay, we'll get to it. I again, this is where I'm like, I think I'm going to save this for horror because, like, I have thoughts, but I think a lot of it is going to come down to the two. This will feed well into our notes.
Yeah.
Good job.
So now is the part where I can get into, like, the differences and the cultural stuff, or I can save it if we want to get into. Okay.
I love it.
So looking specifically about how they imagined their Suspiria, the 2018 Suspiria, they wanted to expand it past the bounds of the Dance Academy and tie into German politics at the time.
Okay.
Their phrasing was the original was hermetically sealed inside this location.
Right.
But it was largely, like, it was largely separate from the city and influences there. And yes, there are scenes outside of the academy, but they don't have as much screen time. And the focus is less on the actual societal context and more on connecting specific characters for plot.
Right.
She goes out to meet Dr. whatever the fuck.
Still about what's happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's not about where the location is.
Right.
It's about who she sees there.
Exactly.
So for this, the writer, Kajanik, said that he read German feminist writings of the time, listened to the German recording artist Nico, and watched the works of German filmmaker Rainer Werner Fassbinder.
Mm.
There's a quick caveat. I am not well-versed in the feminist movements in Germany, nor am I familiar with the specific political tension of the time, which becomes a sticking point later. I almost said a picking point, like a bone to pick. Picking point.
Bone town.
Some phasmophobia jokes for you. So the depth of my knowledge is that in 77, this is before the Berlin Wall came down.
Right.
There was some level of reckoning with the crimes of the Nazis and those who enabled them.
Yeah.
That being said, I don't really see much of that research shine through in the film.
No.
And if he's talking specifically about how much digging and reading he did, I want to see evidence of that, and I didn't. So I have a note here that, like, I didn't revise after I watched. I said, it's possible on a second watch with less wine, it would all connect much more clearly and cleanly. But based on the reviews I read, I'm not sure that wine's entirely to blame for my criticisms.
I don't think so.
And I did watch it again.
Okay.
And it's like, once you're aware of the connections, you can make them the second time, but it's still crumbs. And I am going to read a full-ass direct quote from someone's review in The New Yorker.
Okay.
His last name is Brody, but I don't have his first name. Give me a hot second.
Okay.
Because if I'm going to be reading someone's review, I want to, like, actually.
Right.
Okay, Richard Brody. Thank you, Richard Brody, for thank all that you. You've done. Okay. So I also kind of looked into, like, other stuff he'd done, and he seemed like a chill person.
Okay.
I always want to make sure.
Yeah, no, it's fair.
That, like, I'm not reading something from, like, someone that's, like, anti-Semitic or, like, white supremacist or something.
He writes one article about the movie, and then the next article is, like, why I hate women.
Yeah. And I didn't get those vibes.
Good. Good.
And especially if we're going to be talking about the Holocaust, I really want to make sure.
So fair.
Yeah. And he identifies as Jewish atheist.
Oh, okay.
And so I'm like, okay. So that made me not scared to say his quote.
Good.
So, direct quote.
Mm-hmm.
The filmmakers also shoehorn the Holocaust into the film with a conspicuously effortful shove. The Wikipedic superficiality and political frivolity with which these grand historical and psychological themes are applied to the gory drama are matched by the appropriation of a few jingling baubles of feminist dialogue meant to get viewers hungry for substance to salivate. They're the product and fruit of lazy filmmaking. The movie has nothing to say about women's history, feminist politics, civil violence, the Holocaust, the Cold War, or German culture. Instead, Guadagnino thrusts some thusly labeled trinkets at viewers and suggests that they try to assemble them. The result is sordid, flimsy Holocaust kitsch, fanatical chic, with all the actual political substance of a designer Shea t-shirt. That last line, designer Shea Guevara t-shirt, I'm like, yeah, okay.
Scathing.
So that's Richard Brody. And just like, you tried to take all of these layers, but you didn't do it well.
It's so accurate. It's like they wanted us to, I don't know. I just don't know what the context of it. Like, it felt pointless.
Yes.
Like, no consistency.
No consistency.
Like, it felt just like they were like, oh, this is happening during this time.
Yeah.
And then you go, oh, for what reason? Like, what does that add to the story? And they go, you know.
And I'm like, you know, don't. We gave you everything you need. Okay, so I'm still working on this analogy, but, like, I felt like you had all of these layers, but they're not actually connected securely.
Yeah.
So it felt like they were layering separate plots and saying, look, they're the same themes, without actually doing the work to connect them. So I viewed it as, like, lining up two sides of a sewing piece and pinning them in place, but not sewing them. I'm like, yeah, they're side by side, but they don't stand up to strenuous wear.
Yeah.
And you can try to put on that skirt, but you're going to have a bad time. So
you're going to get stuck by a pin.
Yeah, and you're going to lose your pants, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know when it went from a skirt to pants, but they didn't do a good job sewing, so who's to say what it was?
Yeah, who knows?
But it just really felt like it was
half done.
Layered, but not securely layered, not thoroughly connected.
I kept picturing it as, like, Photoshop layers.
Oh, my
like,
God.
Usually the layers, you undo one, you start another, and, like, they all build to create a picture. And this one, it would be like, I drew a rabbit on this layer, and on this layer, it's just a picture of me. Like, and they don't connect at all. And you're like, okay.
Yeah, sure.
And at the end, you just have a bunch of drawings, and you're like, for what reason?
For what reason? So now the rest of this is an interview that I have with him, and I deconstruct his answer line by line. Okay, let's see.
Okay.
What did he say here? I can either read the full thing and then break it down, or just break it down line by line.
Follow your bliss.
Okay.
Whatever's easier.
The interviewer's question was, or just kind of statement. I think the biggest surprise that I had last night when I was watching it was just how political it was and how much you brought that to the film, the conversation. Not just the politics of what's going on outside the coven, but what's going on inside the coven.
Yeah.
And how they mirror each other. Where'd that come from? David says, it comes from two places. One, if you're going to really take the story seriously, it's about a group of women who have been denied public access to power for so long that they've decided to cultivate it in private ways, in cult ways. Mm-hmm. The secondary meaning of that word is hidden. So that's the nature of, I think, why witchcraft has always been around, is its ways that women try to find empowerment that they're not given by the system. And so if you're really going to examine that, you have to examine the politics of what makes them necessary, how it can be both empowering and corrupting, because I think the worst kind of female, quote-unquote, female empowerment you could produce today is one that has a halo on it. We didn't want the male gaze between us and the subject matter as much as possible to limit that. I think the politics sprung out of, well, what would this coven be responding to? What political unrest would be it drafting off of? And how might that set the stage for the transference of power that happens between the old guard, the coven, and the new guard that you find at the end of it?
Yeah.
So it's all of a piece. It feels separate in the beginning, but hopefully those things come closer and closer by the end. I don't think they did. So,
deconstructing this.
He says, it's about a group of women who have been denied public access to power for so long, they decided to cultivate it in private ways, in cult ways. How have they been denied access to power? What's the cultural context? How old is the coven? Are they all from different decades and generations, or are they mostly the same age and share a common trauma? To me, it's not enough to shove women into a coven and say, they're fighting back against the patriarchy.
But in what way? We don't know how old they are. We don't know why they've chosen to do this. We don't know if, like, we know that some of them are old, Marcos, but we're like, did she find these people and create this? Yeah. Or was she just like, we've always been here? Like, what?
Yeah. And, like, you need to show the ways in which they've been harmed by the patriarchy. And I'm not saying, like, give us trauma porn. I'm saying, like, you and I know very intimately how inequality and gender-based violence have impacted our lives. And when you use that as a villain origin story, you've got to do more than, well, they're women of the 70s, you fill in the blanks.
Yeah, no. And you can show it easily. You can show it in, like, a conversation. You can show it in something really small without it being, like you said, trauma porn. Like,
yeah. And I don't think I'd be as critical of this if he hadn't said that he'd read feminist writing from the period and region. Again, it's entirely possible that it's deeply informed by second wave feminism in Germany, but I don't see it. No. I don't see any evidence that they're robustly integrating the work of feminist activists and writers.
It's like, he's like, just take my word for it.
If someone says they rigorously research something, my standards are higher.
Yeah.
So then his next quote. So if you're really going to examine that, you have to examine the politics of what makes them necessary, how it can be both empowering and corrupting. He said, like, the worst quote-unquote female empowerment you could produce today is one that has a halo on it. I'm not too angry about that. We've talked about the stages of representation in film for marginalized groups. Like, first they're demonized, then they're too pure to live, bury your gaze.
Yeah.
And then they're finally allowed to be messy and complex and flawed. Right. He's like, let them be flawed, I'm fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine.
Yeah. So then, quote, we didn't want the male gaze between us and the subject matter as much as possible to limit that. I think the politics sprung out of, well, what would this coven be responding to? What political unrest could it be drafting off of? And how might that set the stage for the transference of power that happens between the old guard and the new guard?
Yeah.
In terms of the coven responding to political tension, the RAF hostage situation is brought up like every 20 minutes or so in the background of everything.
Yes.
The coven only interacts with it in as much as it gives them a scapegoat for where Patricia went.
Right.
If the political organizing of different groups was meant to mirror power struggles within the Dance Academy, show us. We know that Blanc and Marcos were both in the running to head the coven, but we don't know how their leadership would differ. We know some supported one or the other, but we don't know why.
Yeah, they show us that vote, and then we're like, okay.
We know Marcos is ancient, and Blanc is ostensibly younger. Right. We don't get a look at their ideologies.
Yeah.
So we don't see a clear enough tension between factions to really get any grasp on how the coven could be mirroring political unrest in more than a superficial connection. And my partner was talking about it, saying, like, well, if they wanted to be talking about, like, abuse of power and fascism, then there needs to be this actual, like, layering of items within the coven of saying, like, okay, if you're looking at this and saying, like, this is Nazis, these are the people that enabled them, these are the people that are pushing back against the people that enabled them generationally, you don't get that depth, you don't get that detail. No. So it's like, I know that Blanc is younger than Marcos. I don't know how anything else differs.
They only show a little bit of their difference at the very end when it's like, Marcos is very like, you're going to join. It doesn't really matter. Say goodbye to your false mother, blah, blah. Yeah. And then like kind of kills sort of in a way.
Yeah.
Blanc.
Yeah.
But again, that's it.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so I had to wait that long for this quick moment, and I still don't quite understand what their difference was.
And then even with that, Blanc comes to care for Susie, but we don't know if her reticence to do the ritual is because she genuinely cares about Susie and that's unexpected, or right. because it shows more about her character. That's who she is as different to Marcos. We don't know.
Don't know at all.
No. Show me your work and pull me along with you. Don't abandon me. I don't know what the RAF stands for. Like, I had to Google it after, and I thought about talking about the German Autumn, but I did not feel like I had enough time to do it responsibly. Right. Because, like, that's not something that I want to fuck up.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to rip the film apart. There were so many strengths. I think the development of plot threads wasn't one of them.
Yeah.
So then this is another, like, feminist thing. So I say, like, feminist thing because it's thrown around a lot.
Yeah.
The interviewer said, so what's interesting about that? And I don't want to spoil anything, but we've already talked about that plot hinges on Anka's relationship with Lutz's character, Dr. Klemperer. Mm-hmm. That's surprising, given that you're trying to go for a feminist statement, and it sort of falls on what this man has committed. And David says, yeah, but if you think about his story, it's absolutely the story of disempowerment. This is a man who presumably did have a voice when these events were happening in the 40s. Do you know what I mean? Who could have used his power as an educated man to some end, but didn't. Suffered a great loss, was rendered passive by it, and then this comes around again, and he has evidence in front of him. So, like, I'm going to read more, but I get so pissed when they're like, he was rendered passive. And I was like, because he would typically be in a patriarchal position yeah. of power, being rendered passive is considered a violence against him. But you're not. I'm just like, whatever. I'll get to it. So, continuing his quote, the new form of evil or fascism or whatever you want to call this coven, you should have given us details to understand how it actually reflects fascism.
Fair, yeah.
Is rising, and he can't step into it in the same way. And so I think his story is important only insofar as it shines a light on how empowerment is happening outside of the coven and how it's rendering the male characters in this film, it's rendering them passive. First of all, rendering them passive is not the same as female empowerment. Male characters being passive is not the same as focusing on the direct stories of characters that are, like, femme identified.
That's true.
So he says the only other two male characters in the film are hypnotized and objectified within minutes of you meeting them. Again, mm-hmm. the lack of male characters does not mean it's a feminist film. So I feel like he's not actually getting the point of a feminist statement when his entire explanation hinges around how a man responds to things happening to women around him.
Oh my God.
Like, we've talked through the complications of saying if yeah. something's feminist, like, which feminism? Because, like, white feminists always, like, prioritize whiteness above right. everything else. And there are, like, so many different feminist movements and waves. Yeah. And it's, like, it can be highly regional. And there's a lot of, like, quote-unquote feminism that is still, like, reifying power imbalances right. and, like, oppression. Mm-hmm. And so, like, even just calling it power imbalances feels like it's sanitizing it. Oppression. Yeah. So, like, you can't just say, oh, there's a feminism. There are many. But what is he saying? I think what we can take something, you know, how the Bechdel test, there was also the Mako Mori test.
Yeah.
And that's from the character in Pacific Rim.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, are the women in the film on their own narrative arcs that are given the same depth as their male counterparts, not just reacting to what the men are doing?
Right.
And I don't think that he is engaging with their story arcs in the same way. And so no. it's like, he does give them story arcs, but when he's responding to the under, like, the parallel plot
mm-hmm.
of Yosef, Dr. Yosef,
right,
he's saying, well, he's rendered passive, so it's still, like, about, like, how they're actually, like, no, rendering him passive is not the same thing as empowering other people.
No.
And you need to talk about the actual tensions that they've experienced, how they got to where they are. Otherwise, you're not actually giving us enough.
They're not focusing depth. On the story of them at all.
No.
Like,
and so it felt like they wanted to do something so expansive. This is a 2.5-hour movie.
It's long.
And they did not give us enough to actually weave these together. I felt like I was given a project with very limited instructions. And then I felt really shamed because it's like, I'm not a history buff. I'm not good at history. I know that's something I should be better at.
Right.
I did not know what the RAF was.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about, like, any of that context.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel like I was given enough clues
yeah.
to understand it. And it,
and also we just, not only that, but, like, we don't know how it ties in
no.
anyway, even if I did understand it. And, like, I don't really see what you're trying to do with the connection.
Because they didn't give us enough detail about the workings of the coven to yeah. understand any ties to Nazi Germany.
So, like, I know you're trying to connect them. I understand. And you're trying to show, like, connections between, like, the relationships and the way they talk and the way they act. And I'm yeah. like, I get it.
Yeah.
But again, I don't see it at no. all.
And the most was done through single lines. Like, when they pull in Dr. Yosef, two of the coven members were like, a woman tells you she's worried and you tell her she's delusional. And I was like, okay, that could have been expanded upon in a broader way.
Right.
Than you yelling at him for something that, like, how do you know that? Like,
yeah.
So they talk about, like, you don't know what this company's been through in the last 40 years and, like, what it means to, like, feel the weight of gravity. Like, right. All of these things are said in lines but not actually given enough depth.
We don't ever get them explained to us. No. Really. And I'm not saying that, like, as an audience member, you need to hold our hand and give us everything. No. But, like, you can't give us a quick line and then be like, and that really explains it.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it doesn't. Because I don't. It's like, I understand what you're saying. I just don't see how it's supposed to connect or make me feel anything.
And I like to think that, yeah, you know, 100 episodes in, we've gotten better like, at understanding, like, cultural context and horror. And I just didn't see the work where, like, it connected it for me. Where it's like, yeah, I don't understand what's happening in Germany right now enough to see how it may or may not mirror what's happening in the coven. And I don't know enough about the coven to make any ideas or, like, comparisons outward.
Yeah, I didn't understand what their whole thing was. I just didn't get it. I didn't understand if they were, like, good friends for a very long time or some members knew or they're, like, we didn't know.
No.
So, you know, I don't know.
And, like, some of these things make more sense on a second pass, but you shouldn't. I don't know, like, it feels like there are mystery movies where it's like, oh, you catch all these things, yeah, but it's like, when you're looking at the major themes of a film,
yeah,
that's, you shouldn't have to dig that hard.
It's not a rewatch bonus if you're watching it because you straight up just could not make the connections and understand things.
Yeah.
You're supposed to rewatch to be like, oh, I didn't see that before. That's a really cool moment, especially for a movie about an homage. Like,
yeah,
a lot of things should be moments like, oh, I didn't know they used the same set piece, or, oh, I didn't know that that character was in the first one. That is the kind of stuff you should catch. Not, oh, I need to figure out how the main plot of the movie connects everything.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have to do that.
No. So, I don't have, like, a bow to wrap on this. I didn't realize how frustrated I was until I started ranting frantically. But, like, I just don't feel like these plot threads were connected or we weren't given enough substance to do that ourselves.
Yeah.
And it made me frustrated.
Yeah, and I think the first one benefits from the fact that it is so stylistic and it's so cool that, like,
plot light.
It's plot light, but that's the thing. Like, there's so little to focus on other than the main storyline of Susie that, like, I don't need a lot of details because I understand why she's at the school. I understand that these are the things she's scared of, and I understand how she fights it.
Yeah.
That's all I needed to know because there's no other details.
And they wanted this to be so much about the political context.
But you...
that you need to do it better then.
You have to. If you want it to be story-driven and character-driven, then you have to explain your stories and your characters and how their past can affect where they are now. You just got to give us more.
Yeah, give us more.
Yeah.
And I feel like there were a lot of strengths in this film, which we'll probably get to. But I didn't think that the, like, actual political context being provided well enough was a strength.
And especially, like you said, when somebody specifically claims that they did research on something to drive the story, but we can't see it. That, if he had said, like, oh, I didn't really do any research, then I would have been like, you know what, I'm not going to hold you to as high a standard, like, whatever, kind of weird that you didn't do research, but okay.
Yeah.
But you can't come in and say that, you know?
Yeah. It reminds me of this, it was like a freshman writing course that I took, and it was comedy and satire, and for, like, one of our things, we could either write a short satire or we could write an essay, and I was like, I'll write a fucking satire. And I got, like, luckily there was a draft process because he, like, panned my original, saying, like, this is not strong enough.
Yeah.
It should be woven through every, like, paragraph.
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't just be the names of people. That's not strong enough for satire.
Yeah.
Having, like, statements isn't strong enough for satire. You need to have the, like, characterizations. You need to have the tone. Like, all of these things need to be part of it.
Right.
And my second draft was much better because I actually researched it.
Yeah.
And, like, tried to really dig into it. But it was, like, something very humbling and very important to be, like, if you're going to do something that is political in nature, you have to weave that in at every stage.
Yeah. This is such a weird way to connect it, but it reminds me of in college we had to do, in a history class, we had to, like, choose a person and write a paper on them and basically write a story that people might not necessarily know and give us more details. And a girl and I had picked the same person. We both chose Marie Antoinette. And the woman was going around being like, can you tell me what you're specifically going to write about that I might not know? And the girl next to me, basically was describing like all of the cliches that people describe, and she was like, I want to write about how she was crazy, I want to write about how she was this. Yeah, and I was like, that's not accurate.
That's not
like
the story.
And it's just like the movie where I'm like, people think these things because they don't know the connections made. Like, maybe she seemed crazy, but she was also taken from her home and she was like 13 years old and these things. And so I was like, I'm going to write about how those things are perceived, but it's only because of the horrible things that happened to her leading up through her childhood. And the girl next to me was like, oh. And I was like, I'm not trying to be mean, but I was like, you can't do a research paper and then choose the cliche things that are known about them off the cuff.
Yeah.
And it's just like the movie. I'm like, you got to show me things from the past to help so that way I can be like, but why?
But why?
Like, why do people think that?
Yeah.
So it reminded me of that where I was like, you got to go in with research. Yes. Like, there's reasons for things. There's nuance. Exactly. Like,
so yeah, that's society.
That was a good one.
Thanks.
I think that leads well into the horror, though. Okay. Because I think what this movie does well is the horror part. Yeah. The plot, not so great.
But the practical effects
are
cool.
But the practical effects are really cool. Yeah. And I think that the way that they tell the story is cool.
Yeah.
If they had just connected everything, it would have been fine. But the storytelling itself and how they choose to tell you things is really cool.
Yeah.
It's just that what they're telling you isn't enough. That's all.
It's not enough, yeah.
We never stopped recording. And why would we?
Why would we? If we sound different, that's on you.
If we sound different, it's because we're snot free.
Yeah. Relatively. And briefly.
You know what this is a perfect time for? Before we get into horror?
What?
What are the ghosts' opinions on this?
Oh, my God. Okay, let's see. I'm pulling out the EMF reader. It might beep. All right,
guys. We have a spirit box and we have an EMF.
Because we're in a haunted hotel. How could we not?
Last night we put them on and I didn't know how it works. So I was just going, hello?
Hello?
And the ghost was saying nothing. I'm going
to
turn it on.
Okay.
It's going to be a sound nightmare. Just bear with me.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Mm-hmm. I have to... I'm the one who has to move it. So... Oh, we're going to be on FM.
Okay.
Kate?
Yeah?
You want to ask a little... Little question.
How old are you? What's your name? I'm just doing Phasmo.
Anybody?
Are you here? That's a radio station. I think it's a horse race. So we have to scan through. Are you here? They're jamming. So we got some good radio stations.
Did you guys hear that ghost?
Are you here?
How do you feel about remakes / homages?
What about a reimagining?
Come on, guys.
Do you think I'm too pedantic about remakes versus reimaginings?
How do you feel that I keep accidentally calling this the Martin Van Buren suite and he's not here?
Rutherford behaves like I have something to say.
Rutherford, if you're here, I'm so sorry, man.
Don't worry, I've given her hell.
Here, I'll go in reverse for you.
How do you feel?
Have you ever seen Suspiria?
We should play it for them. The ghost might not have seen it.
Do you guys want to watch it?
Oh. Last night we might have done them a wrong by playing Ghost Adventures. Maybe they didn't want to see that. With the coyotes.
We watched Ghost Adventures thinking that it would, like, I don't know.
I'm turning this off now.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah.
So, okay. So guys, that was our ghost section. Yeah. Did you like it?
We're professionals.
I still don't know if I'm doing the spirit box right, but I think you have to go through. And that's
so
the point, right?
I think you can set the scan speed.
Well, it doesn't move. It still doesn't move. Oh. You have to do the scan. You have to. It says sweep, reverse, and forward. So you, like, skip through them.
Okay.
And I think you're supposed to, like, catch quick ones or something. But,
I have
guys, I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
So
maybe tonight we'll put the headphone splitters in and just be total creeps walking around the halls
Absolutely.
Listening on it. Yeah.
This place is a little fancy. So I'm like, the last hotel we got away with just wandering around with our box of wine.
Yeah.
On the roof. We were taking photos.
We were on the roof.
Yeah. And this one I'm like, oh, Jesus, we cannot walk around here. There's like a very fancy restaurant downstairs.
But I think that there are fewer people on this floor.
I think so too.
Yeah.
So I think we can wander. We're going to wander.
A little bit.
That was my ghost section. Yeah. We don't know their opinions on Suspiria. Maybe they'll tell us tonight when we're sleeping.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
So let's talk about horror.
Yes, let's.
And ghosts, if you want to jump in anytime. Yeah. Rutherford B. Hayes.
Yeah.
That'd be fine.
And also, Martin Van Buren, if you have opinions.
Dude, Martin Van Buren, if you're here, just come say hi. Because clearly I'm a fan. Yeah. I don't know anything about him.
I have no idea what political party he belonged to. As I said earlier, I don't know shit about history. And it is actually shameful how little I know about American history. I know
so much about some things. Yeah. And then other things that, like, I should know about. Yeah. Nothing. Like, I just... It's that ADHD thing where I'm like, if I like it, I will know everything.
Yeah.
But if I'm not interested, I just...
I can tell you shocking things about octopuses.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't name more than 15 presidents.
No. I'm trying to get better about just, like, learning things, even if I don't find it interesting, because maybe it'll be interesting later.
Yeah.
It's
like there's always something interesting there, but I also have very little interest in knowing, like, the nuances of white men that oppressed other people, where it's like, I'll definitely learn about, like, stories of the Middle Passage, those things, like, that's the history that's really important, but it's like, I don't give a fuck about this old white man that was doing these oppressive things. I don't want to know about his personal life. I don't care.
Well, like, you know me, I know so much about, like, clothing, and I know so much about, like, why clothing was made and certain things, but I just don't know important things. No, like, I can tell you all about why beaver hats were so cool.
And
why
the beaver trade.
Yeah, the beaver trade. I know all about the fucking beaver trade.
Yeah. I listened to an audiobook called Eager about beavers, and it talked about the beaver trade.
Yeah, the beaver trade, like, wiped decimated out beavers. Yeah. Like, and that's it's because beaver hats became popular.
And there was a lot of wealth built on the beaver trade. Yeah.
And it, like, it destroyed ecosystems. Yeah. Like, it really fucked shit up.
I think you'd really like this book.
I should read it, clearly, because... I like it.
This is Beaver Corner.
Welcome to Beaver Corner.
We don't know American history, but we know a lot about beavers.
And somehow we're going to tie that into Suspiria 2018.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So now we're talking about horror.
Yes.
I said, I'll just go through some of my notes. Uh-huh. I did say the opening was very intense, and it gave me the first hint that this was going to be a little more character-driven.
Okay.
Because it focuses on, oh God, what's her name, played by Chloe Grace Moretz?
Patricia.
So Patricia,
I could not remember which scene opened it. So I was just like, not helpful.
So it's like her and she's meeting with that doctor and you know, that introduces us to him and all this thing. And it's the first step into like, okay, we're going to understand more about these characters. But then we go and like, we just don't get as much as you think.
No.
So that was my issue. But they leaned in like that was going to be the vibe because I was like, wow, last time we didn't know anything about Pat, really. Like, we just knew that she ran away and something bad had happened, blah, blah, blah.
They invoke witches way earlier here.
Way earlier.
But they still don't give enough context.
Exactly. I thought that because they were more known and it was kind of a, they're witches, like, more people, I don't want to say believed in them, but, like, they were willing to show us and peek behind the curtain a lot sooner. So I thought, good, we'll understand how the, like, world works within the coven. And we just don't.
No.
And it's, but they lead, like, that's going to be it.
Yeah.
So a little odd. I said, also wild to me that this old man is just also Tilda Swinton.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad that you can see those things.
I literally wrote, you can't escape that face.
Yeah.
I just know her face.
Yeah. I watched it behind the scenes on, like, practical effects of stuff, and you just see her, like, laughing and talking to someone. I was like, she looks like she's a delight. It's just, like...
A delight.
I was devastated that I won't get to meet her because she looks amazing. Like a pleasant person.
I know. And this one also has so much more lead up before you get to, like... Like, in the first one, it's, like, Susie's at the dance company.
Yeah.
We see her, like, arrive in a cab.
Yeah.
See some things, a few deaths. Yeah. But it's all within this dance company, and it pertains to, like, Susie's story.
Yeah.
This one is just a lot more lead up. And I said, it's not a bad thing. It's just really different. We've already talked about it so much, I'm going to leave it. But it could have been a good, good thing, but it wasn't.
Yeah.
I said this one, it's wildly different vibes. I said, especially with the music, the lack of wild colors and lights. I do think they saved that for the dance school. I was wrong.
I thought that it was going to be a super vibrant dance school. That was going to be like the pop of color, the only like bubble of color. It wasn't.
It's not. And I thought, okay, that's a choice and fine. And I said, this one is a lot less bright. It's a bit more dreary. So I got that immediately. Like, I said the characters stand out instead of the background.
Yeah.
They have a little bit more bright colors in their outfits. Like some had like a flower shirt or like, you know, they're not incredibly modern or anything like that. Yeah. But they're just a little more vibrant.
Yeah.
Not a ton.
No.
A lot of them were found at like thrift stores and consignment shops in Italy. So that's cool.
I like that.
Yeah. So
I would read bajillions of books. I was going to give like a number and then I thought about it too hard. It's like, I would read a filthy number of books about costume departments. Yes,
it's so fun.
About how they source it, how they imagine it, how they understand piecing together things. I love that shit.
It's so fun.
So if you have wrecks, send them to me.
It's just a neat thing and how people find things. And I think that that was one thing they probably got right. Because, like, you know, they didn't want them to seem overly done, I think, in the costumes. Yeah. Like, they're just supposed to be people at a dance school,
and when, like, finding them is actually important to giving, like what you were saying, people at a dance school, it's like, okay, well, these girls might not have money.
Exactly.
They might.
And so, everyone was a little different, you know. Some people were a little more put together, some people had like nice dance outfits. Susie comes from Ohio. She's from, like, she kind of got herself there. She's got like her little black leotard, unitard, and sweatpants.
She has like two outfits.
And
that's, she wears kind of the same thing. And I was like, okay, cool.
And she borrows dresses a lot. They talk about that. So, you can borrow a dress from me. And she, like, says that. I just accidentally started a new note called hi.
Hi.
Hi. So I think that that's good. The costumes I had no qualms with. I thought they were really neat, actually. And I think that they stand out more than the set. And I think that that was maybe on purpose. Because this one is, like I said, it's character and plot driven.
Tilda Swinton's dresses.
Incredible. Flowy, vibrant, but like,
and
just
like one of them was gathered right here and then one of them was like very like straight, and then once it gets like the mid thigh, it like flourishes out, but in a very limited space. So only if she steps out with that leg do you see the breadth of skirt. And it was so striking.
It was just, the costumes were well done. I believe that those were very thought out, and I could see that being more of a through line than like the plot itself.
Yeah.
I understood the cohesiveness in that. So that's good. I did say this one has a lot more dancing.
Yes.
Were you happy about that? You got some good dancing.
You had told me like there's more dancing. So I was like, thank fuck. So we get to her audition and I was like, I better see her dance. And then they cut away to something else. And I turned to my partner and I was like, are you fucking kidding me? And he's like, give it a minute. And then it came back and we saw her dance.
And,
I was like,
and they have that whole thing where they do the dance that I think she saw when she first wanted to come to the school. Because I don't think they do the one that she's the new one. I don't know. I can't remember if it's the new one that she choreographed or if it's the one that Susie...
They like do knows. Volk, and that's the one that she's seen at the library like a bajillion times, and that's the one they perform.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Okay. So they do that. Really cool. A lot more dancing. I also said, fine, I'll say it. Dakota Johnson's really hot.
Yeah, she is.
Fine, I'll say it. Really hot. I did say the lighting is very moody and spooky.
Yeah.
It matches the tone of the film. This is supposed to be a lot more dreary, a lot more like... You know,
it's supposed to be the German autumn. It's bleak.
It's not supposed to be this other world that you're stepping into. It's supposed to just be a peek behind the curtain of like a hidden world that looks like your own, but a little more darkness. I get it.
Yeah. It's not a fever dream. It's like a different kind of like malevolence made mundane.
And it's like you said. Yeah, exactly. It's like this realistic danger.
Yeah.
Like it's supposed to be something that is otherworldly, but like they disguise themselves to look, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they're part of this real world. I said it matches the tone of the film, which is the complete opposite of the other. I said it's still good. It has the same disorienting feel, but it uses other methods, like camera movement and, like, really quick cuts.
There were a few, like, wild, like, camera moves away, camera zooms, and it's like, that feels like the original, where it felt very jarring and stylistic.
And I think a lot of that comes from the fact that also they were mimicking the 70s film kind of style.
And that was...
Yeah, and I think that's cool. Super cool. And they did that a lot in, not to talk about a different film, but The Conjuring.
Yeah.
They had a lot of those zoom-ins. And I'm like, because it was set in, like, the late 70s, I think?
Yeah.
Mid-70s? Same thing. It's that vibe, you know? You can just tell when you see it. Like, 70s.
Oh.
So, very cool. I said Mia Goth has great Sarah energy. She was the only character that I thought really mimicked the Sarah from before, just less childlike.
Yeah.
I said modern, less childlike, but still frantic.
A little more fire.
Yeah. She had a little more, like, well, she was more thought out, you know? But all of them were.
She was a decade older.
Like, it was great. I said they're hinting at witch coven stuff pretty early. It's very heavy-handed.
Yeah.
But that wasn't really what made me mad. I don't mind. I was like, they're in the school with the witches. I was like, okay, fine. If you want to tell us about them, go for it. Olga looked a lot older than the other girls.
Yeah, okay. So I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just being kind of like a shit. And it was like, well, maybe they're trying to show, like, the strain she's under. But she looked a lot older than the rest of them.
I said Olga looks a lot older, probably because she's stressed as fuck.
Yeah.
My thought is that they were sort of preparing her in the way that they were preparing Susie.
Yeah.
But she wasn't.
Couldn't take it. It's not like she wasn't strong enough, but she didn't want it. No. She was strong-willed. She didn't want that.
I think the whole point is that maybe they had been preparing her for a while.
Yeah. And they were, like, sucking life force out of her.
She knew the dance. She knew all these things. And I think they were sucking life out of her. And I think that that's what they had originally planned on for Susie. She was very young. She was very, like, ready to be there.
Yeah.
But then, obviously, they sensed the, like, witch energy within her and had to change, had to pivot. And I think that's what happened with Olga. That's my guess. Again, they give us fucking crumbs, so I don't know.
And but, it's...
Yeah.
They talk about it, like, very roundabout, where... They're like, oh, like, you know, it didn't work with Pat but or Patricia because it's like she wasn't willing.
Right.
But it'll be different with Susie.
Yeah.
And it's like she thinks like she'll find a different way to do it this time.
Yeah.
And so instead of being like more coercive, like bring her into the fold and then be like, this is your sacrifice. Instead it was more like feel the power, like whatever.
Yeah, they really let her kind of just do it. Like, they didn't like tell her specifically it was witches, but they were just kind of like, it's here, like, and she just took it. She was like, okay.
And then there was that like fun telepathic thing. That felt...
I think that was supposed, and again, they're fucking crumbs, they don't tell us. I think it was supposed to just be like she's more witch than we think. I think it was supposed to hint the fact that like Patricia couldn't do this. Not only was she not willing, but she just wasn't. Susie was different. I think the whole point was to be like, she's more than we think. And then off at the end, she is.
A fucking being.
And
that predates Christianity.
Exactly. So then we figure that out. But I think it was supposed to be hints. But I'm like, but you didn't give us enough to.
No.
It's fine. Whatever.
It's fine.
Already said it. But Olga looks a lot older. And I think that's why.
Yeah.
I think that she's been there a while, sucking the life force. I think maybe she was part of the coven. And then she started to reject it. I don't know.
Yeah.
They don't really say.
Yeah.
Blanc is also way more motherly in this one.
Yeah.
And the other one, she's very much dance teacher.
Yeah.
And then at the end, we're like
gatekeep, girl boss.
Exactly. Yeah. And then at the end, we're like, oh, right, she's a witch. But barely, you know, it's supposed to be like a surprise. And this, she's more of a mother, but in like the point that all of the witches are kind of the mother. They always say like, reject the mother. Are you, you know?
Yeah.
So I kind of liked it. And I think I was like, it kind of makes this betrayal seem way more intense.
Yeah.
Or it would if she betrayed her.
But she's like... I will let you out of this if you want to be out of it. Like,
so it went the other way than I thought it would, but it still made sense. I was like, she's very motherly, and I think it's because I think she cares for all the dancers at least a little.
And I couldn't tell if she cared about Susie and it was strange that she did, that like this is the first attachment she's ever had. Because when she's talking to Olga, the way she's talking about Patricia is so gaslighting. She's like, if she wants to live in a cellar filling petrol bottles, like, that's her choice. And we would all be crushed if she was shot by cops. Like, it is she's so violent and targeted in that, like, tone and that... To me, like, that did not feel motherly.
She's motherly. Well, it could be motherly to some. Like,
and so I didn't know. Yeah. Sorry, I'm cutting across you.
No, no, you're right. Like,
I just didn't know if it was supposed to be like Susie's different and that's why she's actually getting like true love and everyone else just got control.
Yeah.
Or if it's like Blanc is different than Marcos. I don't know.
Exactly. We don't know. I did get some vibes that she cares. Like, there were certain moments where she would speak horribly.
Yeah.
But it's because, like, oh, they deserted us. But, like, if you stayed, she was, like, a tough motherly figure for sure. But I just, I don't know. I found this weird, like.
So, cult mom.
Yeah, cult mom. Like, 100%. I'm not saying that, like, I wish my mom was like that.
I know.
No. But I'm just saying that, like, I got this weird vibe that, like, she knew a lot about them. And she got to know all of them.
Okay.
And she had this weird, like. I'm not a good mom, but I'm still here for you kind of thing.
I'm not a normal mom.
I'm not a normal mom. But then with Susie, I think it was extra motherly. Susie was different. I think you're right in that. I think that she was, it was supposed to be different.
And that's kind of what ties into, like, if Susie was different, then that's not a Blanc versus Marcos thing. That's a just Susie a Susie thing. So I needed to understand what the old guard versus the new guard, like, is, like, what actual ideological differences do they have materially? Like, whatever. I need to know that.
Exactly. And I just wish that, like I said, I think maybe the motherly thing could have been more fleshed out.
Yeah.
And then maybe then it would have made a bigger difference with Susie. Or maybe it wouldn't. And that would just be how she is. But we don't know.
And before we get into it, or yeah. before I just like lose my mind. This is not one of those moments where like nothing is scary or less is more. It to me, it does not feel like it's enriched by us not knowing these things. It doesn't feel like the tension is elevating it. It feels like it's poorly fleshed out.
Yeah, no, it's not like a let your imagination figure this out. It's more of a genuine like, I don't understand this character. Like, I don't get it.
There could be a beautiful tension of like, we don't know if she's like heartless except for Susie or like this, but I think that that has to be complemented by we know enough other things about her, but we're not sure on this thing.
Well, I think the fact that we each have different opinions of her too speaks to the fact that it's not quite fleshed out, because I'm like, I got kind of motherly vibes in certain moments, but I'm like, maybe that's just because I missed like one line, you know, and I don't know.
Yeah.
So you can't base a character on like a line they say and be like, and that's enough.
Yeah.
Because if you miss it, then it's different.
Yeah.
So I just got a different vibe. And that's, I don't know. But now we're into things that I think are good. They had little tiny light effects when Blanc would touch Susie's hands and touch her feet to sort of, and again, I don't know. Is she enhancing her powers or is she just like unleashing something that she knows Susie has?
Yeah.
But either way, when she touches Susie's hands, it just looks like a normal touch. Yeah. But we can see this little light kind of spread in her hands and her feet. And I thought that was so cool.
Yeah.
So subtle.
Yeah.
Could have been natural, but obviously, like, I think it's not.
Where it's like, you know, when you press down, like, it's pale for a minute and then it comes back. But there was, like, this blue shimmeriness to it.
It's just cool.
Yeah, it was just a little extra.
Yeah, I liked it. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
And as disgusting as it is, Olga's death.
That was stylized as shit. And like,
sick as hell, dude. Yeah. I think it's interesting to have Susie be the one that kind of did it.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even know.
But
I think deep down she does. Like,
because she felt it.
Yes. I think Susie is fucked up.
Yeah.
She scares the shit out of me.
Yeah, I don't think she's well.
No.
I think maybe she is a centuries, millennia old.
Oh, it's almost
creature.
Like she's, you know, the original mother.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that was a really cool thing to have her be the one that kills this person that was kind of in her way. And maybe in Blanc's way, and everyone's way.
Yeah.
And she doesn't even realize it. But I think kind of she does. And that's what's so fucked up. And I said, oh, shit, I forgot about this. I think her dancing is going to kill Olga. And I said, God, that was awful. I don't want to say it. It might be my scariest moment. I was wrong, which is why I'm saying it.
Yeah.
And then the hook in the body, the hooks. I hate the hooks.
The fucking hooks.
My that was really gross.
No, it was, oh shit, Susie's cool and Olga through dance.
But it was such a cool, those were those cool quick cuts that I liked. They'd show her hand moving, and then before they could even like finish the movement, he would cut to Olga
being thrown across the room.
And it was like, it's a horrible way to connect it.
Yeah.
But it was like seeing someone do the wave with their arms. Yeah. Like, and it was like it connected to the other person in it.
And their arms are broken and bent in the wrong way.
Yeah, and they're horrible and they're stuck against the mirror. Yeah. And when she peed herself, I wanted to cry.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was disgusting. I said, yo, this is fucked.
I was unprepared for the number of orifices that liquid would come out of.
Yeah.
And I was not sure what came out of her mouth because it looked, it didn't look like saliva. Anyway.
I just said, oh, she leaking.
Yeah.
I said, they took the original and said, what if we made this 1,000 times more disturbing? Are you cool with that? It's true. And now that I understand more of like, oh, it's an homage, I understand like the emotions behind it.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah. There's a video clip. It's only like 5 minutes long. Yeah. I'll show you. And it's about the practical effects of specifically that scene. Marcos's body.
Very cool.
And then when Blanc is partially decapitated.
So cool.
Nearly headless Nick. Like,
so the like spurting blood. I was like, I'm into it.
Yeah.
This was a movie.
And Griffith stabbing herself in the neck. That's in there. And then death. And
there were a lot of gory moments that just felt okay in this. This was a movie I wasn't that upset with the gore because it felt, one, stylized.
Yeah.
Two, I don't know, just necessary sometimes. Like, I mean, it was gross, but I was like, I don't know. It was stylized. That's probably why.
We've talked about, like, I'm not a gore for gore's sake, but like stylized.
Relevant.
Spaced out enough, at least until the end. But then the end is just
But the way that they shot the end, I think, made it interesting.
And it was all in red. And so it kind of, like, makes the blood less, I mean, obviously it makes it less red because everything is red, so you can't see it against
the contrast
something.
Just isn't there. Like, I'm not going to focus on the blood because I cannot see it.
Yeah, instead it's much. Viscera as their heads explode.
It's the movement of the blood that you can see and not the, like, pooling in the hat. Like, it's... Yeah.
it's interesting. We'll get there. But yeah, we'll I thought it was good. I said, if we see a ghost while we're talking about this, I'm going to shit myself. Not yet.
No. That squeaking was me shifting in my chair, not Nikki shitting herself.
Not yet. We didn't see one.
We didn't see a ghost.
I'll be honest if I do. I'll tell you guys.
Yeah.
I said Blanc is creepy, but I think in a good way. I think she's really good. Poor Sarah. The moment with the cop was terrifying when they're objectifying him when he's like kind of with the hook and the the penis taunting. Yeah. Gross.
It's like, you know, ACAB, patriarchy, probably like Nazi sympathizers, but also like bodily autonomy.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah.
It was spooky. I didn't like it.
That part made my partner very uncomfortable. As someone that, you know, was born with a penis. It was just like, oh, don't look his dick. I was like, well.
I was like, ooh.
And I just turned and I cackled at him.
And then, not only that, but like, it's happening, right? And Susie's like watching it. And I wrote, did she just see that and move on? Susie is going to be like, so into this witch life.
Yeah.
She was like, hee hee. And I was like, yeah, because she's a fucking freak. I love it.
Yeah.
This one has so much more plot than the first. And I said, we're showing the witches right away from the start. That's interesting.
Yeah.
They don't continue.
No.
I said, okay, now we're getting some bright colors. And I said, not a ton, but some.
Yeah.
And it was mostly just, I don't know.
We have like a shimmer effect that, yeah. Susie follows down to the ritual. Was it.
Also, who is Caroline again?
There's a Caroline?
I think.
Oh, is she the one that jumps? She's the one that jumps.
Yes.
The girl with the incredible vertical.
Yeah, because I said, oh, Caroline's going
to
die.
Oh, yeah. Well, you think she is. Instead, she has a seizure, and then she continues to survive.
Yeah.
And it's like, did you just, like, take a small bit of her life force to give Susie air?
That's what I thought. I said, oh, Caroline's going to die. And I said, don't you dare show up Susie. And then I said, oh, Caroline, did they steal her talent? That's what I thought.
They stole, okay, this is going back to a childhood trauma.
Oh, God.
Of seeing, was it Halloween Tree or something?
Oh, Halloween Tree.
I've seen it once.
Yeah.
And it's either Halloween Town or Halloween Tree, but I think it's Tree. And it's like this kid disappears from his friends and they're trying to find him.
Yes, it's Halloween Tree.
Yeah. And I've only seen it once. It stuck with me. I hated it because it made me feel a lot of things.
Haunts.
And it's this kid is like, well, I'm going to die as a child. And like, this is death, whatever. Ugh. And they're all like, oh, we'll give a decade or a year or something. Ugh. Like, they all give like an insane amount of time to save their friend.
That's insane.
And so whenever I'm like someone giving part of their life, I'm like, oh, Halloween Tree. And so I think Caroline had a couple of moments of her life sucked away.
I think. Or just straight up her talent. We don't know.
We don't know because we don't get to see her jump again.
Yeah, we don't. But it. You know, that was just so wild.
Yeah.
And I said, was that one of the witches? Ooh. I don't know. And I said, oh, Sarah, I'm worried. There's a lot of me just being worried for Sarah.
Yeah.
And I should be.
Yeah.
I
mean, Caroline still does go out with the coven members. That was one of the scenes that I was so confused by the first time. And then I watched it the second time.
Yeah.
And I was actually able to tell apart the younger dancers of the company apart from the coven members.
It took me a minute.
Yeah, I can't tell people apart.
I had to go back. I wasn't quite understanding.
Yeah, I was like, why are they uncomfortable with these women, like, fawning over them? It's like, oh, it's because this old woman is drunk and fawning over you and you're, like, 20.
Yes. It was spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I said the movie does the opposite. It's bright clothes, colorful robes on characters that make them stand out in these plain backgrounds or that mirrored room.
Oh.
Again, focus on characters.
Another moment where I almost did Mirrors and Horror.
Oh, I know. I was like, this one's good. And then I said the music has some similar moments to the original as well, where it kind of focuses on those loud noises that are kind of jarring. But for the most part, I think it focused on silence and being quiet and creating like a loud atmosphere to unsettle us.
Yeah.
And it had more like actual like music sounding music instead of like that unsettling. Sound effect created music. Yeah. Really cool, though.
Yeah.
So Sarah sort of takes on the role of the original Sarah, but also the original Susie. Like, I was like, she's kind of like curious, like Susie in the original, and she's kind of walking around. She's kind of solving things for us instead of being like this character that's driving the information for Susie specifically. Like, she's kind of doing the investigating.
Yeah.
Which the original Sarah kind of did too.
Yeah, did the legwork, was like, here's the book of all the information.
Yeah, like, she still kind of does some of the legwork, but now it's obviously like the opposite, where Susie's like, chill out, Sarah, everything's cool.
Yeah, she's like, there's nothing going on.
And it's like, okay, sure, freak. And then that just said, dang, mom, what an insult to say she's what I smeared on the earth or the world.
Oh, yeah.
Whew.
Oh, boy.
She's right. Oh, creepy, creepy girl.
Yeah.
I did not like the crawling dead girls. No. Creeps me the crap out for poor Sarah.
Oh, God. Sarah, like, or Patricia rolls over. And then I think it's Olga. That's, I think it's like, Olga.
Yeah.
And at first you think, like, oh, she's coming to get her. But no, she's just begging for help.
Yep. It's terrifying.
Fuck.
And I said, this dance floor is bringing vibes of the original.
Yeah.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. The ankle break. Disgusting.
Oh, God. Compound fractures where it, like, breaks the skin. I think that's what a compound fracture is. Or is compound where it's in two places?
I don't know. I think that's it, though.
Anyway, whenever a bone breaks the skin, I'm like, no thanks.
Oh, grosses me out so bad. I said the closer we get to the end of the movie, the more the music kind of started to resemble the original, where it, like, builds tension and it starts to get so loud that it matches this wild atmosphere. I said, this feels like a trick. Is his wife actually back? I was right. I said, no, his wife. Yeah. Poor dead Sarah, but not really. They got me.
Yeah.
I said, Helena Marcos is terrifying. That's Tilda.
I had the word. Okay. So you're watching this, you see, like, she's an elderly woman in a chair. And when you don't look at her too closely, you're just like, oh, there's a lot of skin there. And my partner was like, oh, gross. And I was like, that's ageist. And then I look and I was like, no, she does have extra hands coming out of her stomach. And I was like, okay, I take it back.
All right, fair.
And he was like, hold on. There's like a that's face ageist. There.
It's like, nah, man, she's like sucking in other people.
And I was like, yeah, that was unfair of me to say that. And I apologize.
She had those tiny sunglasses. She had like those teeny little glasses. I loved them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I said, Trish is really not looking so good. And no. I said, so many heads exploding.
Yeah.
That's my scariest moment. We'll skip it.
Yeah.
I said, can't believe the old man survived, genuinely.
Yeah, truly.
Then my last note was just, what a wild fucking ride.
Oh, yeah. I stopped taking notes about an hour in. Yeah. So that leaves an hour and a half that I didn't take notes for. So let me see if I had any good things to say.
I'm sorry I talked for so long. I just, like, I wanted to get through all the, like, differences.
No, I think I couldn't shut up. So I think that you helped balance the scales here. I said, oh, we are starting off with a rain-soaked ingenue pounding on a door. Yeah. Different ingenue, though.
Yeah.
Let's see. This invokes witches way earlier than original. There was a quote, they've been underground since the war. And it's like, we're given all of these, like, small tidbits that, as we've mentioned, don't really add up enough.
Right.
Drab colors. And then there's this quote that it's like, I think it's like a cross stitch or something. A mother is a woman who can take the place of others, but whose place no one else can take.
Right.
And it's like, okay, so like theme of motherhood and like motherhood's motif. But
that,
like,
was a theme that I think kind of stuck throughout for a little bit. Yeah. But...
And I was like, what's the theme? So,
We're
both like, it's just,
I wanted it to be like more important.
Yeah.
Like,
and I don't know if this is something that, like, other people view in the same way, but when I was in AP English, something that we talked about was, like, motifs can be, like, single words, but themes should be phrases. Okay. Where it's, like, a motif of motherhood, but a theme of, like, motherhood conquers all or something.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, and so I don't know if that's how other folks consider it, but that's how I was taught. Okay. And so I was like, okay, so we get motifs as of motherhood, but what's the theme of motherhood? Is it, like...
Is it that, like...
It's... Like, motherhood can come in many forms, or that motherhood can be detrimental, or that, like, motherhood can be, like, abused in this way. So, like, I just didn't fucking know. So this is when Susie's in the subway and she drops the pamphlet and a witchy wind blows, and it's the first time it actually felt like the original. And you see the little Suspiria on the subway sign. I was like, oh! A few, like, camera movements, and I was like, okay, dope. That, like, really feels accurate. Let's see. A lot about camera angles.
Camera angles were great in this.
Yeah, no, I thought it was great. Like,
funky and yet also straight on.
Yeah.
So you never knew what to expect.
And one of the things I loved was that we'll often have dialogue where no characters are on screen.
Yeah.
And so we had this with, like, when they're voting, it's, like, people setting a table and the voting's happening in a different room. Or, like, Blanc and Susie are talking about the importance of, like, getting air and, like, seeing it from many angles before they enter the mirror room. So it's, like, I thought there was a lot of, like, really good sound design and, like, use of dialogue over top of other images.
Super good moment, too, just so I don't forget, when Susie's auditioning and dancing and spinning.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden Blanc is there.
Yeah.
I think that's cool. Like, they felt something and she had to show up, and it gave us that weird feeling of, like, magic, like she teleported, you know?
Yeah. Let's see. Oh, Olga was crying while walking downstairs and miraculously didn't fall down the stairs.
I know. I was like, you go, girl.
Every time someone successfully navigates stairs, I'm like, how dare you brag?
Us going down these stairs here, I'm like...
yeah. So they're carpeted stairs and the ends are very rounded.
And they're like plush carpet. Yeah. So they're kind of squishy. You kind of sink in.
Yeah. I don't do well with stairs, especially carpeted stairs. Yeah. So my last notes are, she was thinking of fucking like an animal. And camera angles as she's shit-talking Olga.
Yeah.
That's it. That's my last note.
Yeah.
I had a lot of thoughts, but nothing that I wrote down in the moment.
Yeah. I will say they do kind of stick to Susie's character development throughout. And I'm happy about it. We do get to see her, start from this girl that we assume is this meek, close-minded, meek, naive Ohioan girl.
Yeah.
Where she just doesn't really know anything.
Yeah.
But then when she says that line about, the animals fucking, we're like, oh, yeah. She's... she knows things and she, you know, she's a little less naive than I think we think. And she also says that thing about sometimes I only need to be told twice.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yes, she's not as meek as we think. Yeah. A lot of things get, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just changes. Her character changes throughout, but it was okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't too bad.
From the original, the character, each character got more depth than they did in the original.
Yeah.
But the way that their stories wound together,
that's it. Their stories. It's not their character themselves. I think they did well with the characters. I understood who they were supposed to be and kind of their role within this story. I just wish that their stories intertwined better and I understood why they were happening.
Yeah. And it's Patricia had so much more fire and depth and purpose. And in the original, she's fleeing, she's freaked the fuck out, she dies. That's it. But in this one, it's okay, she has revolutionary sensibilities or something. I don't know. I might be wrong. I don't know the cultural context, but...
Yeah, we didn't get a lot of context for Patricia, but I also felt that, the school had kind of permeated her mind a little bit in the way that she talks to the doctor. Because, she won't stop dancing. She's still, kind of singing while she's telling him these things that are, affecting her. And I'm she's unwell. She's really... messed up from the school.
Yeah.
And I think that small moment that we got to meet her that kind of proves that. And I liked her. Yeah. I liked her character. I wish that she had been around more. I wish we had more flashbacks to Patricia so I could see how she got the way that she was.
Yeah.
Because I'm if you're the original, I don't care because, again, it was such a quick.
Yeah.
You kind of knew what the plot was going in.
Yeah.
And you were cool.
Yeah.
I don't need to know more. This, I'm like, well, if you're going to tell me more, then tell me more.
Yeah. And in the original, Olga is just kind of a rich bitch that lives in a very strangely lavish apartment.
And you were like,
and
whatever.
And is just kind of mean to people. And in this one, she is like, no, call Olga a cab. She's done with this. And
exactly.
And she's like, this is such shit. She's so mad because she's like, you're being so callous and lying about Patricia. She was my friend. And so every single character has more depth. The named characters.
Yes, yes. And again, if Olga is older for a reason, I need to know. Is this just a casting thing? Was she just the right person for the job? Or is there a reason?
Yeah.
Has she been there a long time?
And they talked about, we think maybe Olga could be next, but then Susie. And so it's they were kind of grooming Olga.
Yes.
And
is that why?
We didn't get enough.
We just didn't get enough.
Yeah.
I think that this movie is very good. I just wish that, there were some things that I understood a little bit better and that they had told me more so that way I could enjoy it to, its fullest.
Yeah.
You know?
Stylistically, this movie has so much to offer.
I think it does.
The characters have, strong arcs and development. Just context and plot, you know?
And there were quick moments that were one lines. My scariest moment is, a one line thing.
Yeah.
And it haunted me.
I feel like I know which one it is.
We'll get there. I can't wait. I hope you can guess. I'll let you guess before mine if you want.
Yeah.
But those are all my notes is that, I think stylistically, I think that they took it in a different direction, but it looked great.
Yeah.
I have no issues with the stylized parts of the film.
Yeah.
I think that it's really cool. And I don't mind that it's different than the original.
No.
I don't care, especially because, it is an homage. It's supposed to be the emotion and not the look. And that's awesome. It's the story I have issues with.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
At first I was oh, I miss the vibrant colors. I didn't think I would miss that riotous color so much. But then I was okay, it's just a different style. And it is, it does have a marked, notable style where it's you can pinpoint it.
It's a very dark story. The other one is more fantastical and surreal.
Yeah.
This one is more a darkness that
purposefully hides in plain sight kind of thing. And, yeah. And that's the point. I get it.
In theory, it's supposed to be about, like, the darkness of humanity and, like, yeah. corruption of power and generational yes. guilt. It's not those things.
Yes.
But it's supposed to be.
Yeah. And it is supposed to be, like, something that you wouldn't... they're hiding. That's the point.
Yeah.
Like, it has to look not as standout.
Yeah.
You know, it's not wild. It's Don't not supposed look here. To be. Exactly.
These are not the droids you're looking for.
These are not the... Exactly. Yeah. Like, it's a moment of, like... Someone could go to this dance school and be like, this is a dance school.
Yeah.
But if somebody went to the dance school in the other one, they'd be like, what the fuck's what the happening fuck? Here? So, like, I get it.
Yeah.
That part's great. So let's just...
Scariest moment?
Yeah. I'm like, we've already said our qualms yeah. and I can't say it anymore. So let's just say the moments that we thought were really great.
Okay.
Do you want to guess mine?
Okay. So I think it might be, but I'm like, I don't know based on when you said, and that's my scariest moment. I don't know if it fits in, but it's in the same like 20 minute chunk. Mm-hmm. It's when they're taking the doctor in mm-hmm. and they're like, she said she was scared and you said she was delusional. You had a chance and you didn't.
Yeah.
That's okay.
No.
Okay. What was it?
That was good though. My scariest moment is when they're standing in the circle and Susie's going around and she says, what do you wish for? And they each say to die. I'm tired. I want to die. It's just the way that they're saying it. Especially for some reason, Patricia and Sarah, I think we got to know them, but the way Patricia is standing, even, I think that like, Chloe Grace Moretz was not in this movie very long. Is it Chloe Grace Moretz?
Okay. It is, yeah.
She's great.
Yeah.
I think she's really good. I've always thought that she's a good actress, and I think Mia Goth's amazing.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, like, to see Chloe... But to not get to see Chloe in this very much, I was kind of sad, because I really think she's good.
Yeah.
And she has a face for, like, sadness and despair. Yeah. So the moment when she's sitting and she's kind of hunched and her body is clearly, like, even though it's on this red filter, it's very clear that, like, she's decaying. Like, her body's not right. And when she holds her and she's like, what do you wish for? And she's like, to die.
Yeah.
It's so quiet. And then she just does.
Yeah.
And it's the same for Sarah. Yeah. She, like, lifts up her chin and she had this, like, relationship with Sarah.
Yeah.
Sarah didn't want any of this.
No.
And to have her wishing to die and earnestly asking Susie to die as if she is like her mother and she's giving her this gift even though she didn't want any of this,
and she tried to confront Susie about it, like, it
like sent me into a spiral where I was like, she shouldn't have to ask this person for this, but of course it's all she needs, and I'm like, I got furious.
Yeah.
And that's it. I spiraled.
And then Thom Yorke's singing behind it, so melancholy.
Thom Yorke. it like fucked me up as bad as, like, the bear in...
Oh, shit.
Yeah, okay. it got me bad.
Yeah.
Annihilation. That's just so everyone knows. That was, like, my biggest scare moment that I still think about. Like, it's my Roman Empire. I think about that bear screaming a lot, and I think about this a lot now.
Okay.
I will.
I get it.
Dog ain't right.
Dog don't play fetch.
Don't play fetch no more.
Dog ain't right.
I'm gonna not be well.
So just credit where credit's due. That's JPC.
Yeah, sorry, everybody.
Patreon content from Hey Riddle Riddle.
Dog ain't right.
We love you.
It's become my go-to thing for, like... anything that's not right. Like, if I eat something off-brand and it doesn't taste like the original, I go, dog ain't right.
Like, off-brand Pop-Tarts? No.
Dog ain't right. Dog don't play fetch no more.
Dog don't play fetch no more. Dog
ain't right. Man, we love Hey Riddle Riddle. Check out our episode with Adil Rafi.
Oh, that was so fun.
It's a really good one.
I still haven't sent him the t-shirt.
Oh, we made a funny t-shirt for Adil. We had to send it to him.
We do. I'm bad at mailing things.
We'll get there. We still have postcards.
From months ago.
I pass them every time I come to your house and I go, oh.
Yeah, I put them next to the door in theory that, like, I would take
them.
I
almost said, let's take them. And I said, let's just mail them on the way.
There's a post office box here. I don't know what my problem is. I live so close to a place where I could mail things. Meaning a post office.
We'll get there.
Okay, what was your scariest moment?
What do you think it is? So, I know you don't like the jump scares. Mm. Not like them, but I mean, like, I know they scare you. I was thinking it was possibly, like, Olga's death at first, because I was like, that was really gross.
Yeah, that was gross.
And then I thought maybe it was the moments with Sarah, with the crawling girls scaring her.
Yeah.
And her kind of like, oh, you know? Yeah. So that those are, like, my two. But then again, here's the problem. I don't remember jump scares very well.
You know, I don't remember a ton of jump scares in this, but you are so close with your second guess.
Okay.
It's in the same scene. It's when Sarah is running from Olga and Patricia, and holes open up on the floor, and that's when she first breaks her leg.
Yes.
Because you see these, like, shadows, and then you're like, what the fuck? And you don't know who's chasing her. You don't know what's happening, and it got me.
It was a really good moment. That moment with them crawling towards her was, like, my... At first,
that was a second,
yes, like, I had a moment where, like, everything would be that, and then they said that, and I went, never mind.
Yeah. Dark as shit.
Yeah.
Are you ready for tropes?
I'm so fucking ready.
The first one is the 70s. It takes place in the 70s.
I guess it does.
Body horror.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, yeah.
Color wash in that last scene, it's entirely red washed.
It's...
gorgeous.
I gotta say, I love that scene.
Oh, it's amazing.
I feel like that's gonna be polarizing because some people are gonna be like, I thought it was kind of too much. And I'm like, I fucking loved it.
If you saw the original and you liked the original, then you don't like think that scene is too much, because you are of the opinion that you like that dramatized, very like heady thing.
I truly think that if this movie had fixed its story issues, it would have been a hit. I really do, because I think that scene is so fucking cool. That's it.
Death by adaptation. Olga doesn't die in the original.
No.
You just don't hear from her again.
No, she's just like, bye.
She's just like, I live in an apartment.
Yeah. Literally, she's just kind of like, I live off campus.
Yeah. Gorn. Homage.
Ooh. Yeah.
Humanoid abomination. Marcos.
Marcos.
Important haircut. So this is something
that
I noticed more upon the rewatch. Yeah. Patricia says, they took my hair, they took blah, 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 they took this.
Right.
I think it doesn't even say, like, they took my urine. And, like, they do blood or drug tests.
They did
test.
Take her urine, yeah.
They definitely did that.
Yeah.
I didn't watch the beginning twice, and so I don't remember if that's what she says. But I was like, does. Did she say that? Okay. But she definitely says they took my hair.
Yeah.
And they do haircuts.
Yeah.
And Susie.
I know, the Sarah Susie's still getting you.
Has this gorgeous long hair, and they cut it to, like, shoulder length.
Yeah.
And it's an important haircut. And then... in the final, like, in the ritual scene, the elder witches are wearing hair. Yeah. Like, everything they're wearing is hair. Who? Okay.
Yeah.
Just think how itchy that would be.
I kept watching it and being like, it's a lot of hair.
That's a lot of hair. Whew. You got a lot of blondes in there, too.
And, like, I don't, TMI if you don't want to know, but, like, sometimes your hair can get stuck under your boob if you're really long hair.
Yeah.
And it's, like, sweaty if you're dancing. Yeah.
Okay, so the other day, this is, like, when I know my hair is too long and I need to cut it, but when my hair is down, this has happened at least 5 times in the last decade. So that's why I keep my hair shorter in general.
Yeah.
I had my hair down, I was leaning down, and I, like, inhaled deeply, and my hair got sucked down my throat.
Yep.
And that happened, like, if I'm laying on my side, and, like, an undergrad, I was, like, crying, and my hair was there, and I sucked it, and I had to pull my hair out of my throat.
That's when you know.
Yeah, and I was like, that's when I know to cut it.
And yet I'm still trying to grow mine out as long as possible. This movie especially, I was like, I want my long hair back.
Yeah.
My hair was so long. I have a mullet now.
I love your hair.
Thank you.
It's looked good at every length.
Thanks.
Yes.
I'm growing it out again.
Okay.
I want to suck it in.
She
got herself bad, guys. That was incredible.
I have to have a body moment.
Daytime.
I'm sorry, I'm disgusting.
She's fine.
I'm good. She's
beautiful.
I'm great. I love you. Thank you. I know. So that was an important haircut.
Yeah.
Next we have Mercy Kill.
Mm-hmm.
Your scariest moment. Yep. Plausible deniability. So I don't even remember what this one was specifically in regards to. But it was like, how could we have killed her? We were in a different room. Or, like, she had her papers. Like, how could, whatever. I don't exactly remember what that was supposed to be. But it's in there.
It's in there.
Practical effects.
Love it.
Olga's body breaking. Tilda Swinton's neck being chopped. Helena Marcos just in its entirety.
Yeah.
Dr. Yosef in his entirety.
Very cool, yeah.
Yeah. Death as a person. Or like an avatar of death. Psychic Link. We have the telepathy. Mm-hmm. Remake cameo. The original Susie plays Anka.
Yes, yeah, she does.
I didn't recognize her at first.
I only recognized her when I looked up the IMDb and I went, oh, I know her.
Yeah. It's like when I read that and I did the rewatch, I was like, oh, yeah, I can see it. Okay, right? okay.
Yeah.
And I also, like, read an interview with her talking about the remake, and she was very positive about it.
That's good, yeah.
Yeah. Sickening Crunch. Yeah.
Yeah.
Soundtrack Dissonance. So that scene at the end.
Yeah.
It has that very, like, soft melodic soundtrack behind it. It's slow motion. It's just going around exploding heads and, like, killing people.
And not only
kiss.
That, but it's shot like almost like a double exposure thing. Yeah. Where, like, they're moving and, like, the camera shutter speed's not keeping up with, like, how fast they're going. So yeah. there's, like, traces of them.
Yeah.
Oh, it's cool.
Very dreamlike.
I love it.
So Soundtrack Dissonance, Sweetie Graffiti. So you have Yosef and Anka's, like, J&A in the heart.
Sweetie Graffiti.
And it sounds so lighthearted, and they're like, oh, it's so sad.
I know.
And Your Head Explode. Those are the tropes I pulled out.
Those are beautiful.
Thank
Your
ya.
Head Explode.
Your Head Explode.
Afro-wop.
Afro-wop.
Oh, God.
What
that was beautiful.
Scale are we even going to
oh,
use?
Oh, dear God.
Well, you know what was a recurring thing.
What?
Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
She's so many characters.
My only thought was, like, we didn't have this recorded, but it was Coyotes. And it oh is my entirely God. Unrelated to this film.
It's so unrelated, but yeah.
Yeah. I think Tilda Swinton's is.
Tilda Swinton's. Because
yeah.
she was hidden in there.
Yeah.
So let's hide her again.
Yeah. I don't want to make her responsible for the rating that I'll give this, but I think that that is something we talked about enough.
Yeah. I think I'm giving it a more generous rating than we maybe think.
Okay.
So I will throw that out there now so
yeah.
you know.
Yeah.
And then I'll explain why.
I don't think that I'm going to be, like, brutal.
No.
Okay.
I just have, you know, you ready?
Yeah. One, two. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I figured.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm waffling.
Yeah. You go for yours and then okay. I'll say mine because, like, I think I've kind of talked about mine a lot.
Yeah.
But...
So I think I'm around 3 Tilda Swintons.
Yeah.
At most, I would give 3.5 Tilda Swintons.
Right.
Because I tend to be a plot person.
Uh-huh.
And if someone says that they read a lot of feminist literature, then I want to see that.
Yeah.
And they talk about the male gaze and trying to remove that. And they said, like, one of the reasons that Tilda Swinton played Dr. Yosef
yeah.
was that they wanted to have as few male actors as possible. Mm-hmm. And I was like, but it's a male writer and a male director. So you are the male gaze.
That's,
you are.
I know. I thought about that. I was like, it's made by men.
Yeah.
Like...
And it was like, you can recognize it, and that's dope. You can try to combat it. That's cool. But at the same time, you have to recognize that just removing men from the set
isn't
accomplish it.
Same thing.
And having men be made passive is not the same as empowering someone else.
Yeah, I know.
So I just, like, had enough beef with, like, what I think the writer was going for. And I just, I'm not mad.
No.
I'm just, like, I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed. I just had higher standards for it. And if you're going to have that much depth and draw upon such, like, a monumental generational tragedy,
really important things, like,
you should do so with respect and, like, also, you should do it well.
You should do it with, like, clarity.
Yeah.
You should do it, like,
you should
earnestly.
Do it thoroughly.
And
it,
thoroughly, yeah.
It's just, like, it just really feels like it should have been done better.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this earlier, I have a really hard time judging this on the merits because I like the original a lot.
I do love the original.
And it's like, I didn't even know is what I just said.
I didn't even know.
I had never seen.
Yeah.
I didn't even know. I had never seen the original before, like, a month ago.
I'm so
but
glad
now I have,
we
like,
finally did it.
Yeah. And it's like, I have this intense nostalgia for the movie Holes.
Yeah.
Now, I have, like, a loyalty to it.
Yeah.
And so it kind of sucked seeing it become this. And
yeah.
Oh, do you want to hear what Dario Argento said about
yeah,
this film?
Yeah, I'm actually very curious.
Woo-hoo. Okay. Woo-hoo. Woo-hoo. Let's see.
Oh, boy.
Did I put it here?
I'm actually very interested. I didn't even think to, like...
Okay. Direct quote.
Yeah.
According to Wikipedia. Argento panned the film, stating, "It did not excite me. It betrayed the spirit of the original film. There is no fear. There is no music. The film underwhelmed me." But he did call the film's design beautiful. And it's like, the film design is incredible. I think the characterization is, like, really
yeah.
robust. I think the plot lets it all down, and it's 2.5 hours. And I have a hard
you
time sitting for more than an hour and a half.
Cannot watch something for 2.5 hours and at the end still be like, what the fuck was that about?
Yeah. So that's why, like, I'm tentatively giving it 3 Tilda Swintons.
Yeah, that's fair.
Because, like, I think it's still a good movie.
Yeah.
I just, those weaknesses were enough to frustrate me.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's
so fair.
Okay.
So I gave it 4 Tilda Swintons.
Yeah.
But I'm going to explain.
Okay.
I have the exact same qualms. And
yeah.
I wanted to
yeah.
go pretty low.
Yeah.
But I saw this a while ago when it first came out.
Yeah.
And I remembered pretty much in detail that entire scene with the red. And then I was like, shit, that's, I don't know.
Yeah.
And the fact that, like, it haunts me still, like, that I want to die thing, now
yeah.
that I've seen it twice, I'm like, that's going to be up there with that fucking Annihilation bear. And that's why that movie I thought was so good. I mean, it was really great.
Yeah.
I give it 4 specifically for how it changed the style completely, almost opposite than the original, and yet kept that really disorienting, I don't know, like, I felt fear throughout the movie, even though sometimes they were just dancing. Like, it upset me, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that the acting was so good. I think that, like, the way that it looked was so good that I'm giving it a 4. And if they had just done the plot, like, it could have been more. Yeah. And it almost went to a 3. But then I remembered that red scene, and I was like, oh, damn, I remembered it.
That was impactful and lasting for you.
Literally, as soon as we were like, oh, we're doing the remake, I went, oh, the scene with all the red. And I was like, well, I mean, it stuck with me enough.
Yeah.
So I think just because I think for some people it might have a very lasting effect. I'm giving it a 4.
Okay, yeah.
And if it had, if that plot was good, I think this movie had so much potential.
Yeah.
I'm waffling like you where I'm like, I kind of want to go down to 3. But then I'm like, no, stick to your guns. Yeah. Like, I really think that that's...
It's like at most I give it a 3.5, you know?
Yeah, like... I would never go past 4, and even now I'm like, 3.5's more accurate, but 4 because I'm still thinking about it, and I really think that that moment could be something that other horror movies talk about later and try to mimic, and it would be really good.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, I'm gonna stick with it.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah. Okay, so it's 7 Tilda Swintons.
Not bad.
Which is not as many characters as she played in this film. Oh, no. She played 8.
She actually played everybody. I don't know if you guys know.
I texted my partner when I told him about the Tilda Swinton thing, and I was like, I have this, like, Bugs Bunny playing the whole baseball team. It's like, Tilda Swinton on first, Tilda Swinton on second. Tilda Swinton's everyone. You didn't know it, but she plays everyone.
This makes me feel like we should... I know we have a patron pick coming up, but I'm like, what if we just gave them all Tilda Swinton movies? Because there's enough. And I have a favorite one that I feel like you're going to go nuts for.
Ooh.
It's the one I've told you about, the vampire one, Only Lovers Left Alive.
Oh.
It is such a good Tilda movie. I think you're going to love it.
I'm here for it.
Maybe we give them all Tilda and we make this a fucking Tilda
We've gotten sweep. Some incredible recommendations from folks on really our Instagram.
Excited.
There's a Romanian one that someone recommended, and a super sweet listener in Romania reached out.
Oh, I know. It was really nice.
So nice. And mentioned, like, I don't want to, like, give away too much.
Right.
We're probably going to cover it.
And
then another one brought up Jeepers Creepers.
Yes.
Because
that's 50 years?
Something's 23 years.
Not 50th, duh. 23, though.
Yeah, and so that's a May thing.
Okay.
It's
okay.
It's gonna be May. I have the nasal just in my heart, so. And my
nose,
in my chest.
As I was talking about the movie, I was like, my nose is getting worse.
Yeah.
Also, we gotta go. Our cursed girls' night is coming.
Oh, yeah. We might survive it.
Guys, we might survive.
Yeah. Okay. So I think that wraps up our discussion of Suspiria
2018. We gotta go.
If you enjoyed your time with us, we would really appreciate it if you'd rate and review on Apple Podcasts.
I hope you do.
I see that folks have also rated on Spotify. Thank you.
Thank you.
Just truly anywhere you listen, it helps. Thank you.
Honestly, just telling your friends, like, if you're not into it, but you have a friend who loves horror movies and they like it. The person who reached out to us actually was like, I don't love horror, but, like, listening to you talk about it's really fun. If you're too grossed out by horror movies, we do the dirty work. So
we do it
we're
for
here
you.
For you.
So, just tell a friend or, like, reach out to us. We're on Instagram. We're not
you can
on
talk
Twitter
to us.
Anymore. Yeah, just
yeah,
reach
Twitter
out.
Exploded because I just can't.
Yeah.
It's a nasty place to That's be right fair. Now. But Instagram's great.
Yeah. So, like, reach out. So it takes me a while to get to them because often they go to, like, a filtered request thing and I don't see them for a while, but we read everything.
Kate sees it more, but if you ever want to talk to me, you can just follow me on Instagram.
Yeah.
I'll fucking respond. I'll be like, what up?
And speaking of, our Instagram is just cool with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And every week we'll post the movie for the week and then some, like, no context quotes, that sort of thing. You can also check out our extended show notes. That's where I put all my sources. Mm-hmm. And then, like, if we reference memes and stuff.
Yeah. Or, like, something funny, video, stuff like that.
Yeah. That's a wee bit behind, but it's about halfway there.
Yeah.
Living on a prayer. You could even take a look at our Patreon at patreon.com/justcoolwithit.
Woo!
We are chipping away at Alien Isolation for the horror game stream.
It's so hard.
It is a challenging, punishing game.
It's a really hard game.
We'd like to take this opportunity to thank our patrons: Kim, Kelly, Nihar, Rachel, Kelsey, Sula, Tim, Beth, Katie, Morgan, Brady, Kenny, Janice, Brian, Jess, Ada, Dalton, Andrew, and Olivia.
Woo!
Ah,
I danced that time and it went well.
It was the dance that made it,
I know.
The intro and outro music was created by Anthony Roccozella. The cover is by our very own Nikki Solomon.
My head explodes.
Yeah.
No, wait, even better. Tilda Swinton.
Tilda Swinton.
I take off the mask and I'm like, I've been here the whole time. Is that what she
But talks? I've been Tilda Swinton too.
Like she's Ringo Starr.
I don't. Is she British? Is she American? I don't know shit.
Fuck, I think she's British, but don't quote me because I don't know.
I don't know. She's going to be like Australian and I failed at everything.
But she is.
She can't be. I refuse to believe that she's Australian.
Tilda, let us know.
Yeah. Reach out. She's We'd love reach to talk out, to be you.
Like, I fucking hate you guys.
It's her and Jordan Peele that will never speak to us.
We talk about Jordan Peele like he is our old bestie, and we're like, oh, we love him.
Yeah.
He's like, who
the fuck? This is creepy.
We did that whole episode of like, don't idolize people. And then we were like, oh, what an amazing person.
It's like, we are aware of parasocial relationships.
We are the problem. I know.
We but get
he's
it.
So cool.
He's so cool.
Tilda, you too. Welcome to the club.
Welcome. Club of two so far.
Mingle, have some snacks.
Yeah. I'm sure you'll have a lot to talk about. Like,
I bet they'd have a great time.
I think they would. She should be in one of his movies.
Tilda.
Tilda. Call him.
Get on it.
We
gotta get him before
they like sue us or something. We're gonna do too much damage. It's good. It's good for me.